like aggressive turning.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, March 24th, 2024. This is your award-winning Give Our Nation Media Assassination, episode 1645.
This is No Agenda.
Running down replacements and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
Yeah, from Northern Silicon Valley, where we're all celebrating the first time in 110 years that a rookie won the Grand Sumo Tournament. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Takeru Fuji. Did I get that right?
Kind of, yeah. T-A-K-E-U, Fuji.
Oh, Takeru Fuji.
He was injured. He lost the match yesterday, and we got injured, and he was up in the air whether he'd win today, because he had to win today, win the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then I noticed something that was, I don't know why it takes me these now, many years.
Do people understand that this is the... This is the big sumo championship that you follow and update us on every 6 months, it seems.
People expect it somewhat. But I noted, now I've been following sumo for over 40 years, easy.
Yes, and 16 of those right here on this show.
Now, it's the first time I've noticed this. The winners, and I think this may be endemic to Japan. The winner comes out and they ask him a lot of questions. He never thanks anybody.
Really? What a douche.
No, I've never seen any Japanese wrestler thank anybody over the years.
Not even his
agents?
And
I think it's because we have, in this country, we have a thing called obligatory gratitude. Mm. So if you watch the Academy Awards, I thank my agent, mom, my dad, my director, my producer, my fellow actor. They go on and on and on. In fact, there was some actress that forgot to thank her husband, and they got divorced, like, within a month. You remember that?
Vaguely.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of and then if you have, like, Obama says, you know, nobody's a self-made man in the United States, you got to thank the government. It's because we put roads on the streets, we paved the roads. As if it wasn't for paved roads, you wouldn't make any
true.
Money.
That's true. It's true. It's true.
And I've tried to figure, I was thinking, why does there's no thanks for the stable they're in, there are no thanks for their coaches, there's no thanks to anybody.
Oh, Phoebe.
The dog doesn't even get any thanks. I'm guessing it's because the Japanese they have obligations.
They're a thankless bunch.
No, I think they have obligations and duties, and they don't expect to be thanked. Huh. I'm just doing my job. Why are you thanking me?
Well, that's true.
It may be an insult to be thanked.
Tipping in Japan is, in fact, an insult.
Yeah.
If you tip, they will come running after you out of the restaurant and say, oh, no, I'm just doing my job. You should not be tipping me. That was the most amazing thing I ever witnessed when that happened.
This may be because duty is accepted as a thing, and to be thanking somebody is insulting them. I'm supposed to be doing this. Why are you thanking me? That's the only way I can figure it out, but they thank nobody.
I think this is a good trend. I'm not going to thank you for anything.
That's not going to happen. We have, and I said it, we have obligatory gratitude in this country. You have to thank people, or else you're a douche. In fact, you started it off by saying he's a douche.
Yeah.
You yourself reacted immediately
that he's a douche. I feel bad now. I feel bad. I think he's right. The only person he should be thanking is God. That's all. Yeah, that covers it all. That's what I'm going to do from now on. I'm not thanking you for anything.
Well, then you're a douche.
Yeah, well, there you go.
By the way, so after this show, there is a thing. I have to say this, and I've been putting it off.
Okay.
But you have a doppelganger on NHK.
On NHK, on the Japanese television station?
Yeah. There's a guy named Josh Danielson. Well, if your life had gone differently, this would be you. He's a super square. He wears a bow tie, and he's a presenter, but he's terrible. Every time I look at it,
I don't like any of these things you're saying here.
I'm always look askance at it as, is this Adam doing this bit?
I'm looking for him now.
You're going to have trouble finding him, but if you find him, you'll see him. He'd be wearing a bow tie, and he looks like you. And it's like, every once in a while I think, is this is a second job that you do as a joke?
Most people confuse me with the drummer from The Police.
Oh.
Stuart Copeland. A lot of people confuse me with him. It's like, hey, that's your brother. Yeah, it's your brother.
Well, this guy's a kind of a doppelganger with a bow tie. So,
thanks, John. Thanks.
So on this show, again, I'm noticing now that I got this thing about the lack of gratitude, they're playing a bogus story about how the T1100 Toshiba laptop was the first in the world when it wasn't, by a long shot.
Wow, there's a twist and turn I did not expect.
And they go on and on about it. And I noticed that throughout the thing, they kept mentioning other companies, but never mentioned their names. They said that in another company. Again, showing no gratitude.
Who is this? Who is not thanking? Say, you miss me. How do we transition from the sumo guy to the Toshiba laptop?
They weren't thanking anybody either.
Okay. Wow. All right. A little bit of tech history for you, everybody. Remember those Toshiba laptops? Woo. Yeah.
Well, I always thought they made some of the best laptops, but they did not make the first by any means. That would go to Grid.
Now, before we get into the news du jour and talk about what the algo told us to be worried about today, not even 4 days between our last show, even the show prep, so 3 days between the last show and today, it's already happening. I'm going to play a 1 minute Redux clip of Dr. Jen, America's favorite doctor. Remember, the reason you need to take Ozempic or any other GLP-1 drug is because the risks, I mean, you've got to think for yourself, is the risk of taking it less or more than the risk of not taking it?
People often don't realize that these were first FDA approved in the United States for help in managing type 2 diabetes almost 20 years ago. So we have extensive safety and efficacy data. They have a good track record. However, when you talk about risks, I think you need to ask 4 questions. What are the risks of taking these drugs versus what are the risks of not taking these drugs? What are the benefits of taking these drugs, and what are the benefits of not taking these drugs? We know conclusively that if you do not treat or manage the conditions of overweight or obesity, the risks are significant. Increased risks of heart attack, stroke, various types of cancer. That has to be part of this decision-making analysis. So take a very rare potential risk or side effect of this class of medication. But if a risk is noted to occur 1 out of every 100,000 times, that's rare. That's one case. But if all of a sudden 1 million people are on that drug, you're going to see that rare risk or side effect 10 times.
And to quote my favorite comedian, George Carlin, the fix is in. The game is rigged, folks. Because here we go.
Millions of Americans may soon have more access to a popular and expensive drug for weight loss. Medicare says its plans can cover Wegovy, but only for certain patients. NBC senior business correspondent is Christine Romans. Of course,
notice the business correspondent, not a doctor.
He is here with more. Christine, good to see you. How many Americans could this affect in the future?
It's fair to say millions. This could be millions of Americans. You have 65 million Americans who are on Medicare. And for people who have heart disease, risk of stroke, their doctors can now prescribe this this important drug to help them reduce the risk of heart attack, stroke, and other serious cardiovascular disease. So this is really a game changer for public health. Medicare is not allowed by law to cover weight loss because of the Fen-Phen scandal 20 years ago, but it can now cover it for heart disease, which, of course, goes along with obesity. 70% of Americans suffer from being overweight or obesity. So this is a big, big population of people.
So what if you do want to get it covered for weight loss? Is that just out of the question? Is that on the table? People are thinking about
it? It's still out of the question. You have to talk to your doctor about whether you are at higher risk for heart disease because of your obesity. Weight. Right. So that's really important here. But there's also the problem with how much it costs. If you don't have this prescription, I mean, it's $1,300 for one package, which lasts last a month. It's $16,000 for a year's supply. But these insurers now, mostly they mimic what Medicare does. So other insurers may start covering this as well. But here's the thing. We know that being overweight is very expensive in terms of your lifetime of medical risks. Right. So insurers now have to start weighing whether it's really important to get more people these drugs who can tolerate it so that they can prevent other kinds of health problems down the road.
And potentially bring down costs.
Absolutely. Well, exactly.
Impact is going to be huge for a lot of Americans. Christine, thank you.
Great. Bring down costs. Yes, bring down costs. Yes, it's already over. Yes.
So did you notice a little term in there?
I noticed several. Which one did you want?
Tolerate.
Oh, yeah, because you're puking when you take this stuff. But here's let's do some, you're bumping. Let's do the back of the envelope.
No, I didn't actually tell you. If I explain what that was, then it's annoying. I've been trying to fix it.
Let's agree on a code. I heard a bump. Something went bump in the night, John. I don't know what it was, but it came from your end of the connection.
Yeah, I wish it would. See, I'm trying to make it happen again. I won't. It's weird.
Let's do some back of the envelope stuff here. They said 65 million Americans are on Medicare. Let's just say the average amount of people who are obese, therefore, which can be
all of them.
Well, no, it's 60% is what they're saying.
Okay.
So let's just
do the math.
Let's do 30 million times 16,000
a year.
A year. What is 35 times 16?
35 million?
Well, it's 35 million times 16,000.
Yeah, it's in the billions, high billions.
Hundreds of billions.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And and let's stop for a second. Who is paying that money?
You and me, brother, the podcasters exactly. of the world. So if there's no mention of, well, if you go on, if you can tolerate the drug, then you actually have to learn how to control your intake, i.e., if your brain set points as you got to eat a lot, don't eat processed crap. This is going to bankrupt us. Good job, Oprah. And I mean, we only had one day. We should have bought stocks right away. We knew it was going to happen. I had no idea it was going to happen 2 days after her special. Boom, there it is. Congratulations will go.
Well, that was the idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, but 2 days, I mean, no one had time to even consider the stock buy. But this is an outrage. It's an outrage. I could have sold calls. I don't know, something like that.
You can go. You can still buy a call, probably a winner. These things don't shoot up like a rocket.
There is.
Well, sometimes they do.
There is an upside. This is very interesting. Women who are on birth control and then go on the Ozempics or any other GLP-1 drug, apparently they are getting pregnant because this GLP-1 counteracts the effects of...
I did not know this.
Yeah, it's a big story. It's a big story. Now, so you might be able to see this as an upside. Now, of course, the minute you get pregnant, you should stop taking these drugs immediately. For obvious reasons.
Yeah, but you're supposed to take it for life.
yeah, but you know
so you're gonna... a double-edged sword, to say the least. A catch 22, as they like to say.
So they had this regulation, this law that said the government couldn't pay for weight loss drugs because of fen-phen. But I guess that doesn't matter.
Well,
now.
Yeah, I think that's been reverse engineered.
Well, it has been reverse engineered because this.
No,
is
I mean what I say is reverse engineered is the fen-phen. Blame it on fen-phen.
Well, she said,
I don't think that was the reason. They never liked the idea.
Okay, well, that's a good point. I don't know exactly what the law was, but this is an outrage. This isn't because they're not saying. The way they get around it, or whatever the law was, is not. Oh, you know, you're fat. No, it's because you're at risk of heart disease. You're at risk of a stroke. Well, yeah. This is going to bankrupt us even further than these nut jobs in Congress who passed $1.2 trillion spending bill, of which people are arguing over. Marjorie Taylor Greene, oh, I'm so mad. Dude, it's $800 billion for guns and stuff that blows up. No one's even talking about that. Oh, it's $300 million for Ukraine. This is an outrage. Get rid of Mike Johnson. Please. This is, we're out of control. We're out of control, I tell you. We're out of control. Let me play a clip.
What else? There's gambling going on.
Let me play a clip of this.
Tonight, with just hours to spare, Speaker Mike Johnson resisting pressure from far-right Republicans, putting a bill on the House floor to avert a government shutdown. The $1.2 trillion package passing.
The resolution is agreed to.
With Democrats carrying it across the finish line. The bill provides more funding for Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, and labor. It also included money for 2,000 new Border Patrol agents and 8,000 detention beds for migrants. Some Republicans demanding more on immigration.
We've got to regroup after this and get serious about some real cuts in wasteful spending and in securing the border.
But House Republicans torpedoed a border bill their own party negotiated. It could all now put Speaker Johnson's job in jeopardy. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene calling it a betrayal that Johnson worked with Democrats, taking the first step to try to oust him.
You're calling this a pink slip, a warning sign. The bottom line, you want Speaker Johnson out.
I wouldn't have filed a motion to vacate if I didn't. We need a new speaker. This is not personal against Mike Johnson. He's a very good man, and I have respect for him as a person, but he is not doing the job.
Just months ago, Kevin McCarthy was removed as speaker after he turned to Democrats and Republicans to reach a deal to fund the government. The House was paralyzed for 22 days.
I don't see how she could possibly think this will benefit anyone or the American people.
The Senate now preparing to work through the night to get that bill passed and avert a government shutdown. As for that push to try to oust Mike Johnson, yet another speaker, it's unclear how Republicans plan to move forward. The House is now out on recess for 2 weeks.
So everybody's doing their job. Marjorie Taylor Greene doing her job. Let's argue about all the speakers. Meanwhile, no one's read this thing. I mean, I, of course, downloaded. Let me start reading. Oh, it's 1,000 pages. Oh, it's 216,000 words. That breaks, and more math for you today, everybody. That breaks down to $5.5 million per word. This is, these people are crazy. They're spending money we don't have. And this, what's in here, what I've found so far, I mean, the border, exactly as we predicted. Oh, no, we're just going to get more people to process people. Yeah, there you go. There's money in here. I'm sure it's going to go to the International Office of Migrations. Oh, yeah. There's billions upon, 10 million for the task force dedicated to countering the flow of fentanyl. Well, crap, man. We could get that. Give that 10 million to us. You're throwing it away. Just pissing money in the wind. $3.4 billion for custody operations. That's beds. That's beds. It's all going to go to these bogus non-governmental organizations, and it's going to change nothing. Actually, I'm sorry. I'm going to go into it now, and I'm going to let you do Moscow. But I got to go into this now. So first, let's just do a little bit of replacement migration. I said it because that's what the UN document says. Not the great replacement theory. No. Replacement migration. It's a United Nations document from 2000. It's happening all over the Western world. So this happened at the border a couple days ago.
Tonight, alarming video from the U.S.-Mexico border. A group of migrants pulling down razor wire, breaking through this fencing. A handful of Texas guardsmen pushing them away as they stormed toward the border wall. Sources tell ABC News a group of migrants had been staging in this area in El Paso, waiting for Border Patrol agents to arrive. Within hours, about 500 turning themselves in to Border Patrol agents for processing. The Rio Grande River is the international boundary divide.
Now, we don't even need to listen to it. So we all heard about it. Y'all saw the footage. So now let's go to what's the, now the messaging has to come in. And before I even start, I want to reiterate the note that we got from our insider banking professional, advisor to the insiders. I'm just going to reiterate this note. The goal is to get wage inflation in check. I heard you connect bankers and mass migration. I think you're onto something. The goal is to get wage inflation in check so we can go back to irresponsible monetary policy. Central banks do not control inflation because it's bad for society. They control inflation because it's terrible for banks. You can't lend money at an interest rate that is lower than inflation or you will go bankrupt. But interest rates also can't go up. Everyone is so indebted from 20 years of near zero interest rates. Raising them will drive a wave of defaults and banking collapses. What kind of inflation is bad for banks? Well, asset inflation is good for banks because it increases their investments and also strengthens the value of the collateral held against loans. Wage inflation is what banks worry about. So mass immigration, assets go up, wages go down. Bill Maher had two people from Texas on his show. Beto the globalist, loser, and this woman, Sarah Isgar, a podcaster. Both.
Oh, no.
I mean, of all the podcasters in Texas, I pulled a couple clips because they both actually do a great job of explaining exactly what's going to happen and why. But first, let's gaslight everybody.
The Republicans are always saying, well, the Democrats just want open borders because they want more voters. Is that completely wrong?
It's completely wrong. I mean, the people that they're talking about, the immigrants who are coming in, by law, cannot vote. They're in asylum application purgatory for 6 years.
But their kids can.
Their kids can. That's 18 years down the road. I mean, you know, you think the Democratic Party is able to plan 18 years down the road on anything? I don't buy that.
Okay.
But it really is. There's a real serious dynamic to this and a really dangerous one. This replacement theory that is trafficked by those who are talking about Democrats bringing immigrants in
right.
to take the state or the country over politically. Our governor traffics in that, our lieutenant governor. And there was a guy in 2019 who came to El Paso and he posted before he walked into a Walmart, "I've come to repel the Hispanic invasion of Texas." Goes into that Walmart and slaughters 23 people because he believed what Donald Trump and Greg Abbott and all these people were telling him. He was afraid that he was going to lose his power and that this invasion was really going to take over the state.
Now, Beto may be a douche, but he's not stupid. He's using very, very tricky words here. Our governor traffics in these theories. And let's all think that those guys are talking about the voter base. Yeah, it's all about the voter base. And, you know, let's remind everybody who we really are.
So I would love to see my party standing up and reminding this country who we are in the first place. We're a country of immigrants and asylum seekers and refugees.
And
that has made us the leading superpower in the world. And we won't be able to maintain that status without welcoming more.
Remember, Beto's in-law family is super rich. I'd say of the banker clique.
For people to
One quick question. You, by the way, are you an immigrant? You?
Am I an immigrant?
Yeah.
No. Are you?
Well, no, I'm not. So, is anyone who how many people you know that are immigrants? It's a nation of immigrants. Makes the implication that every single person's an immigrant if it's a nation of immigrants
and asylum seekers. Not just immigrants.
So that's just a blatant lie.
In the world, and we won't be able to maintain that status without welcoming more people to this country. Now, we've got to do it the right way. It's got to be orderly. It's got to be safe.
No one would look at what's going on now, really, right, and say, this is the way an immigration system should work. I don't think we need to work on it at all. No one has that opinion.
We're basically funding these cartels that used to run drugs. They don't need to run drugs anymore. They run humans, $10,000 a pop, and you get three tries at the border.
Excuse me, lady. If you think that running people is more profitable than drugs, you are an idiot. Drugs is way more profitable than trafficking people. So she's now, and she's supposed to be the conservative here, she's now gaslighting everybody. Oh, no, the cartel, they've given up on drugs. Pay no attention to the fentanyl addicts. No. They've given up on drugs. It's people.
They don't need to run drugs anymore. They run humans, $10,000 a pop, and you get three tries at the border. They're running small children and leaving them in the desert when they get inconvenient. And then some of those children, they're ending up in places for sex trafficking, in child labor, in agriculture. We are funding these cartels that are then corrupting the countries from where these people are trying to flee from. We've set up the worst system that we could possibly have for immigration. It is a crisis to not actually have a border.
Okay, so what's happening here is they're both on the same team. You'd expect Bill Maher to have some opposing opinions, but these two,
really,
they're tag teaming. And now Beto's going to launch a couple of memes. The one we already know is the legal pathways. We don't have a border problem. We have a legal pathway problem.
So what's the fix? We need more legal pathways to come to this country. And Sarah's 100% correct. Only Congress can do that. The president has done about almost everything that he can. This DHS appropriations bill that passed the House today, it now, over the course of Biden's presidency, has doubled Border Patrol spending, which is five times greater than what it was 20 years ago. He's added sections of wall. He's deported more people than President Trump ever did. That alone is not going to get it done. You need ways for people to come here and work the 9 million jobs that we haven't filled, to join family, to flee persecution, and to do it legally.
And the Democrats didn't crawl there.
Here's the new meme. Listen for this. There's 9 million jobs we've got to fill. 9 million jobs, which is very close to the 10 million people you're bringing in. 9 million jobs we've got to fill. Well, what about those jobs, Belle?
Part of the problem here is the asylum system. We have this giant magnet. You know, after World War II, we were very understandably and correctly embarrassed by what we did about Jews seeking asylum from Germany. And
this is interesting. Bring in the Jews. This is how it's because of the Jews that we have this asylum system now, because we're very embarrassed when we didn't let Anne Frank come in
Europe. And so we have this asylum law where if you get to the United States, we are going to hear your asylum claim. Well, unfortunately, that means there's just a huge incentive any way you can to get across that Rio Grande River, because then we have to hear your asylum claim. That's the other thing that only Congress can fix. The president cannot fix that. And as long as that's the rule, that get here and you can stay, as long as you say the magic words, I have a credible fear of returning to my country,
right,
we're not going to fix the border.
Because it's the only...
Now here comes Beto.
I agree with you. There are people applying for asylum who should not, but it's because we've capped quotas from countries. We don't really have a guest worker program to speak of. There are people who want to come here to do jobs that nobody born in this country is willing to do. 9 million of them unfilled.
I bet if we paid them more, they'd be willing to.
It's possible. And we could try that, but I've talked to cotton gin owners in Texas, and they say...
So hold on a second. So he says, no, there's jobs, 9 million jobs in this country that people don't want to do. They don't want to do these nasty jobs. She pipes in and says, I bet if we paid them higher wages. Oops, that's the opposite of the idea, Isgar lady. And then he says, oh, no, I've talked to the cotton gin. Literally, we want slaves.
Because we've capped quotas from countries. We don't really have a guest worker program to speak of.
Guest worker program.
There are people who want to come here to do jobs that nobody born in this country is willing to do. 9 million of them unfilled.
I bet if we paid them more, they'd be willing to.
It's possible. And we could try that. But I've talked to cotton gin owners in Texas, and they say it doesn't matter what I pay someone. No one born in Roscoe
cotton gin owners
is willing to do this.
Yeah. I know your clothes aren't made.
We're still using the cotton gin?
We're still using cotton gin. We're still ginning cotton.
Wow.
But the point is, you've got to create more legal pathways.
So Beto is saying we need slaves to run the cotton gin, which of course is exactly what the... raise wages? Well, that might work. We could try it. But really, we need slaves for the cotton gin. And then here's the kicker where Isgar just nails it home.
I hate political antics. I really do. The busing was a political antic, but boy, sure makes a big difference when all of a sudden Chicago and Boston and New York suddenly notice that we have a migrant problem.
Right.
No shit.
Now that's right. And that's exactly what they did. And the result is exactly what they wanted. Here are the union activists in Chicago.
Over 100 people gathered at Chicago's Federal Plaza, hoping their chance reached the White House.
So today we are demanding work permits for all.
A mix of long-term undocumented workers, dreamers, and allies of immigrants. immigrants held a rally demanding President Joe Biden use executive action to grant work permits, not just to new arrivals, but all undocumented people.
The narrative is not to take away, you know, resources from one another, you know, putting guns one another, but we just feel like it's time and the president has the executive power.
Organizers say undocumented people in the country don't have a pathway to obtain a work permit.
Most of the individuals that are here have been in the United States for over 20, 30 years.
Undocumented workers shared their stories of difficulties they face in the workplace due to lack of having one. Supporters representing hospitality workers say it's crucial the federal government address this issue.
The immigration system is broken. There is no doubt. And we need comprehensive immigration reform to fix it.
That's the union lady.
Alderman joining the rally.
What other country do you know where people have to beg you for the right to work?
Every single one.
Say this is no longer an issue that can be pushed aside.
Don't come for votes if you don't deliver on the work permits and dignity for our community.
The Associated Press reports the president also faces pressure from leaders in his own party over the issue of work permits.
We urge President Biden, along with you, to expand work permits for long-term undocumented immigrants.
Proving this will be an issue at the forefront of an election year.
Hold on a second.
Work permits for all.
You're losing me because of the logic here. This is that last thing. That was a union person who said that.
No, that was an older person.
This is what's happening. It's falling apart.
That was an older person. I don't know what her name is.
But you
heard work permits for all. They're just saying, oh no, there's all these, but they're asking the president for an executive order on work permits for all. That's what the union people want. And they're there.
The
with
union is asking for work permits for all?
Yes. The union is.
What kind of a union is this?
Good paying jobs. Good paying union jobs. This is a scam. This is exactly what
the union is asking. What is in this clip?
Mm-hmm.
If the union, a union, is asking for that, just to let every undocumented worker get a work permit, this is not a union that anyone should belong to. It's not a union of the workers.
Union. It was Local One.
Local. Well, that's our union in Michigan.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is the hospitality workers. Of course, not the cotton gin. No. They want them for hospitality. They want them for chicken plants. They want them for pork plants.
Oh, yeah. They definitely want them in the meatpacking industry.
Well, it's not even going to be beef anymore. It's just going to be repackaged. You're just packing pork from
meat
China.
Food.
It's an outrage. But they're doing it. It's going to happen. And the way you do it is you send them to Chicago, and the Chicago gets all mad. Oh, yeah. Well, you can fix this. Work permits for all. It's going to happen. It's a foregone conclusion.
Well, if it's based on the fact that we need to lower wages,
yep,
by screwing the union workers, by the way,
mm-hmm,
we have to lower wages to keep the inflation and everything in check and keep the machine working correctly. Yeah, obviously it's going to happen because it's designed to happen.
And once you can work here, I'm pretty sure the next step is you can vote here. That will happen. But podcasters, controlled opportunists, stop for a second with the military age men. No, they're coming here to take your jobs, you morons. Coming here to take your jobs. Yeah. Your jobs. That's why they're here. And is it happening here? No, it's happening everywhere. This is Matt Goodwin, who spoke at the big immigration debate in Westminster in the United Kingdom.
Most people out there who are not in this debate tonight think that net migration levels are 70,000 a year. They have no idea what's going on. Net migration is 700,000 a year. Over the next 12 years, this country is going to change in ways that we can scarcely imagine. Between my daughter being 2 and 14 years of age, we are going to see another 6.5 million people arrive in Britain. 6.1 million of those because of migration. Immigration is going to represent 92% of all population growth in this country over the next decade. We're going to need about 5 cities the size of Birmingham to accommodate that kind of growth. We're going to be 70% on the way to another London. You were promised lower, controlled, high skill, high wage, highly selective migration. You've been given the opposite of that. You've been given mass, uncontrolled, low skill, low wage, non-selective immigration. You were told that's going to strengthen our economy. Every single study that's been done on the kind of migration we now have, low-skill migration from outside of Europe, shows the same thing. It takes more out of the economy than it puts in.
So this is the same that's happening in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in Scandinavia, in Germany, in France. It's all the same. And it would be, I mean, hey, I'd be the last guy to say I don't want a Haitian cooking for me and a guy for the garden for cheap. That'd be great. Unfortunately, you know, this lowers all wages and you can't. Yeah, if you're living with 10 people in one apartment, which is what these people are forced to do. Yeah, that works. But if you're living by the standards that we hope our kids will live at, it's not going to work because of the money printing. See previous topic. Of money we don't have, $1.2 trillion. So there you go. That's what it is. And we just passed a huge package to process them, to get more people at the border to process them. More beds. Oh. But oh no, 300 million for Ukraine and Mike Johnson's got to go. Let's have that be the topic of discussion for the next 2 months. Blech. On a lighter note, Kara Swisher was also on the show, your protege.
She's not my protege, and she says so herself.
Kara Swisher was on the show promoting her book, which is a book about how people hate her, I think. It's called Burn Book.
Well, you do for sure.
I don't hate. No, I love her. I love all people.
Well, you love her because she provides material, which is money in the bank.
I have respect for her.
You?
But what's cool about this clip is she does the thing that I do not like about her, where she says she'll interrupt you and say, but go ahead. You know, the thing that I had to untrain you from.
Well, you accuse me of developing it in her.
Well, she still has it. And what's interesting, what's fun about this clip is she's a little too slow for Bill Maher because he turns around and whoops her. It was good.
Who's going to not like this?
All of them.
Yeah. But they like you.
No.
They respect you. No? None of them?
Some of them. I think they're scared a little bit, I guess. Some
that's
of them
good. That's
irritated. Irritated, for
that's
sure.
That's the job of
media. And, you know, in the back of the book, instead of, you know, you do blurbs on the back of a book, I put all the insults they had, like, Elon, you're an asshole. My voice is so shrill, only dogs can hear me, and that my heart is seething with hate. So that's what Elon thinks of me. Which I'm like, look in a mirror, sir, but that's...
He's a complicated guy.
Oh, okay, sure, why not?
Well, that's... I mean...
How about he's just not a complicated guy, he's just a jerk, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you know what?
Oh, go ahead, he is complicated. But so are you, so am I.
Okay, well, now you just debated with yourself and
yes,
agreed with me.
Yes.
But go ahead. What an annoying habit that is.
Because it's okay, but go ahead.
Exactly. Could you bump your mic when you do it? That's okay, but go ahead and then bump your mic.
But go ahead.
There you go. No, you're not even doing it right now. I don't even know how you do it.
I know what it is. It's not the mic at all. Okay. But it is the mic.
Anyway, so that is, in a nutshell, what people should be worried about is that we just agreed to print up a whole bunch of money we don't have for things that will make our lives worse, and all these dildos are in on it. Like, oh, yeah, this is great. That's good. We'll get all of our donors. We'll get them all cheap labor, and I can get a slave out of it myself for my cotton gin.
The cotton gin thing.
He literally brings in slavery. It's crazy. I mean, it, the messaging is all over that guy. He's not as dumb as I thought he was. He knows what he's
Beto?
Doing. Beto? Yeah, he's a messenger.
He just looks dumb. The problem with Beto is he doesn't present well. He looks like an idiot.
He's Satan's advocate is what he is.
And he was, I guess he was a, when he was young, he was a juvenile delinquent.
Well, we all have checkered pasts. I'm going to hold my tongue.
Well, not your doppelganger.
Who, Daryl Hall? Mm-hmm, of Hall & Oates?
Josh Danielson. Yeah,
okay. All right. So let's, now that we have that out of the way, let's spin the cycle down and let's talk about the Moscow attacks. I believe you have a package.
I do. I have four clips for the Moscow attacks, and it's just they're kind of interesting. You know, this is still up in the air what's going on, because the latest is they caught the guys that they caught trying to escape to Ukraine. One of them is a Ukrainian soldier, and you know, so Putin says it's Ukrainians. Our CIA says it's not, but our CIA also noticed that it was going to happen. They predicted it, and they didn't know where. So this whole thing is messed up. But let's start with clip one.
Russia is stepping up security after at least 133 people were killed and nearly 200 injured in an attack on a concert hall in Moscow on Friday. The attack, claimed by a group linked to ISIL, was the worst in Russia in decades. President Vladimir Putin has declared Sunday a national day of mourning. Dorsa Jabari reports from Moscow.
You know, just to pause it for a second, what confuses the matter even more is this is Al Jazeera. They said ISIL, which is Islamic State in the Levant. ISIL.
They're sticking to it. They're whether anybody likes it or not.
I heard a report that said Daesh, which is another one of those names. And then
synonyms.
In the U.S., we have ISIS-K. I mean, the branding is all over the place for these guys.
That's because they don't exist anymore. This is bogus.
Yes.
The scene, the morning after one of the worst attacks by an armed group in Russia's recent history. Emotions are running high as Russians come to terms with what happened, including those who survived.
They started to shoot in our direction. They shot people and threw petrol bombs. People were panicking and so scared. Only now I understand how lucky I am.
It is so terrible what's happened here. I really can't comprehend this. It is an ugly act of terror. They're animals.
Heavy security and checkpoints now surround the suburban area about 20 kilometers northwest of the center of Moscow.
People have been coming here all day to pay tribute to those who lost their lives in what officials call a terrible tragedy. The task of recovering the dead is expected to continue for the next few days, as will the mourning of the families of the victims, along with the rest of the country.
President Vladimir Putin has called the attack a bloody and barbaric act and vowed revenge.
We will identify and punish everyone who was behind the terrorist attack, who prepared this strike against Russia and its people.
Okay.
Yeah, so this then devolves over time into three theories. One, a Ukrainian attack was in Russia.
Right.
Which I kind of subscribe to. Mm-hmm. Also, the other one is that the main operative was a CIA guy, and this is a CIA operation.
I'll go with the CIA Mossad for 300, Alex.
And then the third option is the false flag that Putin organized.
Just like he blew up Nord Stream. Yeah, that's my favorite. Yeah.
Well, no, more like when he blew up the apartment complex in the Chechenian area.
Which?
Nord Stream's not part of this theory. Let's go with part two.
No one will be able to sow the poisonous seeds of discord and panic in our multinational society.
As the president addressed the nation, hundreds of people queued to donate blood at centers in Moscow. The FSB security service said four suspects had been arrested while heading to the border with Ukraine and that they had contacts in that country. Ukrainian officials have denied involvement. These pictures purportedly show stores of ammunition seized by officials inside the Caracas City Hall, suggesting the attack was planned in advance. ISIL in Afghanistan has claimed responsibility. Dorsa Jabari, Al Jazeera, Moscow.
Here's a question that I don't think is really being asked. To what end this attack? to what end? For what reason? I mean, the only reason can really be to destabilize the Russian government, to destabilize Putin because he can't keep his people safe. That has regime change written all over it a week after he's reelected president, or as some would say, dictator. They don't talk about...
Who's into regime change? What international organization?
Let me think. Catholics in Action?
Maybe. But let's go with this this analysis, which blames the whole thing on Putin.
Well, in his address to the nation, President Putin said the alleged attackers were arrested whilst fleeing to Ukraine. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Putin of trying to shift blame to Kyiv for the attack.
Instead of addressing Russian citizens, Putin was silent for the whole day, thinking about how to link it to Ukraine. Everything is completely predictable.
Well, Rob McBride sends us this update from Kyiv.
Ukrainian officials here have dismissed any claims of a Ukrainian connection to this attack. We've heard from Andriy Yusov, who's a senior representative with military intelligence here, calling such claims a nonsense, that the alleged perpetrators were apprehended as they were approaching the border area with Ukraine, saying it's the kind of explanation put out by Russian security, the FSB, for what he called a zombified Russian population, making the point that after more than 2 years of full-scale war, that border area on the Russian side is so saturated with roadblocks, with soldiers, with security, that if you were trying to escape such an attack and to stay free and escape the law, it's the one place that you would not be heading. We've also heard from the Center for Countering Disinformation, another government body here, another government agency, which has gone further by suggesting, but without any evidence, that this may have been the work of Russian special forces as a so-called false flag operation, intimating that Russia has been suspected of conducting such attacks before, around about the turn of the century. And that was as a precursor, they say, to the invasion of Chechnya. And the reason that security forces of Russia may have orchestrated or be involved in this attack is as a justification for a new round of mobilization. Robert McBride, Al Jazeera, Kyiv.
Now, the reason that I would suspect this is not the case, a false flag, is that in the false flag in Chechnya, the people killed were Chechnyans, not Russians.
Yeah.
So there's no evidence that that Putin and his folk kill their own to create a false flag.
There's also I'm sorry.
I'm also leaning to Ukraine because some reports show that the route back to Ukraine was cleared for these guys to escape, as opposed to the commentary made by the Ukrainians that you can't get through there. There's too many people, too many guards, too many robots.
Again, I ask you then, to what end? What is the point of Ukraine doing this? Like, how, we got you? Don't bomb the crap out of Kyiv? I mean, what's the point?
I don't know. Maybe in clip four, we'll learn a little more and then we can discuss it.
Domitila Sagramoso is a senior lecturer in security and development at King's College London.
Yeah, she's the spook college.
Says Russia's attempt to link Ukraine to the attack in Moscow is unjustified.
I think that this is a huge security failure, also because of the audacity of the attack, the number of casualties, which keeps growing, and this big fire which engulfs the place. Also, apparently, there were not many policemen there. It took them quite some time to get there, the sort of the security structures. And that is also quite astonishing, because this is a very big place where people were gathering. So one would have expected some kind of police deployment, if only for internal security reasons, you know. So it is very embarrassing. And what is very sad is that it seems that the Russians are using this to build a connection with Ukraine. So I very much fear that Ukrainians are going to see massive attacks and massive bombardments or something of that kind coming from Russia, although I don't think they have any connection whatsoever. But this insinuation that the Ukrainians are somehow behind, you know, helps Putin to sort of divert the attention, because where would he attack otherwise? I mean, he's not going to start bombing Afghanistan.
You know, the problem I have, and it's interesting because I remember a couple of weeks ago, I was just looking for it now. And of course, I didn't clip it because I wasn't thinking about it that way. I remember a warning went out from the State Department that said, American travelers, also embassy workers or whatever else it was, be careful, terrorist attacks being planned in Russia, particularly large gatherings and concerts. Oops. That was a little irritating. And then when you have MSNBC, and before we start to discuss it, I'll play two clips here. We have MSNBC bringing on John Brennan. You've got to wonder.
Putin had a warning, right? That even the United States said, hey, look, this could potentially happen. You're in danger, et cetera, et cetera.
By the way, that warning was just the public State Department warning. It wasn't like a secret phone call to the Kremlin. It was a public warning.
Just for the uninformed and uninitiated, we are on the opposite side of Russia. We are defending Ukraine. The Russian Federation.
Thanks, douche. I was so uninformed.
Wow.
Just for the uninformed, just so you know, we're not with the Russians.
We are on the opposite side of Russia. We are defending Ukraine. The Russian Federation is still considered a problem. There's no issue. There's no question there unless you happen to be a certain kind of Republican. What is the incentive? What was the incentive of the United States to give warnings on terrorist attacks like this to Putin's government? And the fact that this came true, does it in any way thaw relations? Are there any sort of undercover thank yous that are occurring? Or do the Russians just sort of ignore this and say, well, you warned us about something, but that just makes you suspicious in our eyes?
The U.S. intelligence community takes very seriously its responsibility that's called duty to warn. If the U.S. intelligence gets information about planned terrorist attacks against targets around the world, and it's credible, it's reliable, and especially if it's specific, which this was, we will share that information with the foreign services, the security and intelligence services. And clearly there was some significant specificity to this when there was reference to concert halls and in coming days. And so the timing of this warning, I think, was very much on target in terms of what happened here.
Some could call it an incredible coincidence, but it was on target. Putin, by the way, doesn't take it that way. This is the BBC.
A couple of weeks ago, there were warnings from the West, from the US, that extremists could be planning attacks in Russia on large gatherings, including concerts.
Yes, and Vladimir Putin openly rejected that. He dismissed it. He called it blackmail, which is an unusual choice of word. I don't quite know what he meant.
Didn't quite know what he meant. Yeah, you do. Come on, I'm a podcaster. Even I can figure that out. You're like, hey, if I don't do something that you want me to do, you're gonna cause some event at a concert. It's that simple. Then we have ISIS, who's this is a good clip from the BBC. This is fake news. It wasn't the Islamic State. No,
Sergei Markov is a former member of parliament for Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party and a supporter of the president. Julian Waraker asked him for his reaction to the attack.
I visited this Krokus City Hall many times, and it was a great, very, very big trade center, one of the biggest in Russia, in Europe, I think. And also I visited a few times this concert hall, and of course this very big tragedy. Frankly speaking, in Russia, here, absolute majority of the people strongly believe that this terrorist attack had been organized by Ukrainian regime, and also some rumors and information from American intelligence service saying it's Islamic State, but it's very difficult to believe in this version.
Well, let me just go there for a moment, if I may, because the Islamic State group has claimed it carried out the attack, but you're saying that well, that's what they've claimed.
No, it's wrong information.
Okay.
This was fake news organized from the resources close to the Ukraine that Islamic State claimed that they take responsibility. No, and the official resources, they said. But this also old formula have been used by Islamic State, a few years ago, have been used for this fake news.
I love it when he says a fake news. And then he starts overmodulating. He's really upset about this. No.
I agree with him. This Islamic State thing is bull crap. For one thing, what are they doing in Afghanistan where the Taliban runs everything? They're not going to put up with these guys.
But I think these guys were actually from Kazakhstan. I have a report.
The one guy they caught was from Ukraine.
I have a report somewhere that says all four were from Kazakhstan. I mean, maybe it's in this one. This is the CBC, Scandinavians.
We heard from the Russian Investigative Committee. And as well as giving an update on the number of those killed, which we're told included three children, it said the attackers used flammable liquid to set fire to sections of the concert hall last night, that automatic weapons were used in the attack, and that the ammunition left behind at the scene is now undergoing ballistic, genetic, and fingerprint examination. Now, ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. The United States says that claim is credible. And earlier this month, the White House said it had warned Russia of a potential attack in Moscow, that extremists had imminent plans to target large gatherings in the city, including concerts. And as a result, the U.S. State Department advised Americans there to stay away from large gatherings. But those warnings appear to have been dismissed by Russian officials, with Putin even describing them as open blackmail and an attempt to scare and destabilize Russian society. Security in Russia has, as you would imagine, now been tightened in response to the attack, Russia's worst in 20 years. Tomorrow, a day of mourning will be observed to remember the scores of people who were killed and injured.
I didn't label it, which I accept so many of these reports, but I can't go with Ukraine. I've got to say that this is a typical destabilization operation. And, you know, and if anything, we've got to rekindle that Ukraine stuff a little. We need Putin to get mad. We need people there to not like him. This has us written all over it. I don't like saying it, but I just don't see with Ukraine. No. I just don't see that.
I can see you got a coked up guy running Ukraine. You guys out of control, Zelensky. And I can see him saying, listen, can we do this? Yeah, I think so. We can make a way for the get back. We can do it and escape.
Zelensky, you know, is just not a
nutball, cocaine dreamed.
He's not in control of anything. He's not. He's an actor. He's just reading his lines.
Well, I agree with that, unfortunately, but he does have some sway. Nah. He definitely knows how to collect money.
Well, let's see what he had to say.
Ukraine's president has reacted angrily to Vladimir Putin's claims that Kyiv was involved in a deadly shooting and bomb attack at a concert hall near Moscow on Friday. As we record this podcast, the number of dead stands at 133. Russia says it's arrested all four gunmen who stormed the Crocus City Hall, along with seven other people. In a televised address, Russia's president claimed the gunmen had help from Ukraine and were heading there when captured, despite the Islamic State group saying it carried out the shooting. In the past few hours, Volodymyr Zelensky has responded, saying Moscow is predictably seeking to divert blame.
What happened on Friday in Moscow? It's obvious that both Russian President Vladimir Putin and his gang are trying to shift responsibility onto someone else. They always use the same method. It's already happened. Instead of dealing with his Russian citizens and addressing their concerns, Putin was silent for the whole day, thinking about how to link the events to Ukraine. Everything he does is completely predictable.
That's completely U.S. written talking points.
This idea of being silent for a whole day seems like a positive thing, not a negative thing where you jump the gun and just start yammering.
But the whole point of Zelensky saying he's not, you know, is calming his Russian people. This is a destabilization action, clearly. And I can only point towards douchebags who are running the show. And it's probably the out of control intelligence community. And it also obfuscates one other little thing that took place.
Coming into this summit, EU leaders had to deliver additional support for Ukraine and more pain for Russia. So for Kyiv, they agreed to buy more weapons using interest earned from Russian central bank assets frozen in Europe. But the Kremlin has been sending threats over this decision. The Commission and Council presidents were asked if they feared Russia's retaliation.
So now, this is interesting because now we're going to hear all the nut jobs from the EU who are stealing the money, stealing it, and then pretending they're giving it to Ukraine. But no, they're going to give it to us, to our military industrial base, as it's now called, 90% of it. And that's just fine. That's just exactly what we should do, Queen Ursula and the other guys.
We are not intimidated by Russia, and that's why we are making decisions to support Ukraine and to counter Russia and to sanction Russia. And we think this is fair, that the revenues of those frozen assets will be used for Ukraine, for the Ukraine, because they are a victim of this role of aggression launched by Russia.
So it's fair that we take Russia's money and give it to American defense companies. That's fair. That's fair.
We did the move because we are convinced that it's the right way to go. Russia has to pay for what it is doing in Ukraine. And it's fully aligned with the development of our G7 partners.
Oh.
To increase pressure on Moscow, the Commission proposed tariffs.
Notice she didn't say NATO, she said, our G7 partners. I thought that was interesting.
Fully aligned with the development of our G7 partners.
To increase pressure on Moscow, the Commission proposed tariffs on its grain. It said Russia exported agri products worth 1.3 billion euros to the EU last year. That's about 1% of the bloc's market.
We do not want Russia to have any kind of revenues from the EU agri-food market, for example, the grain market. So putting tariffs on Belarusian and Russian grain is taking away their competitiveness.
This is very interesting because now all of a sudden, she's talking about Belarus, but she says Belarusian grain, that's with one S. Belarusian grain is what it really is. Belarus is in between Russia and Ukraine. So now these people are getting screwed in this deal too.
This move makes clear that we do not want Russian grain or Belarusian grain on the EU market, but transit is still possible.
Oh.
But traders say this is mostly symbolic because Russian and Belarusian exports to the EU are low, especially compared to those from Ukraine, which farmers in Europe have been protesting against for months. This is causing tension. And member states, France and Poland, want the EU to stop allowing Ukrainian grain into the bloc in order to appease angry farmers.
Yeah, this is a beautiful little thing they've done here on the sideline. Let's stop more grain from coming in so we can up the... Well, guys, we need Ukrainian grain. Sorry, 70,000 protesting Polish farmers. Sorry. No, it's just not going to happen. We won't know, of course, what really happened here for a while. I do have a Scott Ritter with Judge Knapp. If you're
interested. Before you go to Scott, let me mention that there's been a lot of reports out of Italy, which has been the target of the Russian grain exports, which are not included in the other sanctions. And they've flooded the Italian market with durum wheat for pasta making.
Oh.
And all the other, the locals in particular, it's collapsed the price of wheat in Italy, but made pasta really cheap.
I guess that's kind of good. I mean, it's not what they...
But nobody talks about that in this discussion. That's weird.
No. Is it, though? Is it weird?
No, none of it's weird because this is all schemed, and yes. All we're doing is picking at the morsels.
I'm gonna shoot you in the face with my noodle gun, you racist piece of shit.
There we go, pasta Glock.
I got my pasta Glock locked and loaded.
Let's go to Scott Ritter. He does know some things, and let's see what he had to say there with Judge Knapp on judging freedom.
We never thought the Russians could do what they're doing.
Right.
We thought by sanctioning Russia that they would collapse. So what's happened now is that we've sanctioned Russia, and Russia hasn't collapsed. Russia has built this, assembled this vibrant defense industry that's outproducing all of NATO, and producing good weapons. The Russians are now, again, I love the people, NATO's expanding. We brought in Finland. We brought in Sweden. The Russians went, that's all right. We're going to create 14 new divisions, dozens of new brigades, and checkmate. But see, the Russians have a system that can do that now. And so now what we're doing is to justify what we've done, people are saying, well, we have a new strategy, and that is we're going to try and repeat what happened in the 1970s and 80s, where we got in an arms race with the Russians and we bankrupted them. We got them to spin themselves into oblivion.
Mm.
But that's not happening. You know what's going to happen? You know who's going to spin themselves into oblivion?
We are.
The United States and NATO, because Russia is so far ahead of us right now. We have to play catch up.
I love Ritter, man.
Yeah, he's funny.
I got one more clip from him.
The European countries are talking about going to a war footing to catch up. America is looking at a revitalized Russian strategic nuclear force, and we go, everything they got outclasses what we have. So we have to get new submarines, new ICBMs, new bombers.
And
Congress, just so people understand, the replacement missile for the Minuteman III, the ground-based deterrent system or whatever they call it, the United States Air Force is going to cost, a couple $100 billion. That's a lot of money, by the way. But it just got through its first funding review benchmark by law. And by law, if early on in these programs, if you're already like 12% over, Congress has to call a halt and review it. Otherwise, you're heading down a path where what should have been a $100 million fighter becomes a $12 billion fighter.
Right.
They were 22% over already. I'm telling the American people right now, this ballistic missile that we want to replace the Minuteman III with is going to cost over $1 trillion. And here's the thing. It isn't going to work. The bomber that we're going to get to replace the B-2 is going to cost far more than they say it's going to cost. And it isn't going to work the way we want it to.
What you've just described is an extraordinary, monumental, catastrophic waste.
Judge, the Pentagon has run multiple audits, and they've admitted themselves that, there's a trillion, that's with a T, dollars, over $1 trillion worth of stuff. They just don't know what happened to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So give them more. Give them more. More. More, more, more. If you have kids who are out of school and looking for a job, they better be looking in the defense industry.
Yeah.
That's our business now. Pharma or defense. Yeah. Let's go back to MSNBC because they're always fun to listen to.
What do we know about this group? It's called ISIS-K, ISIS Khorasan, which has claimed responsibility.
Brother.
Yeah, actually, we know quite a bit, Ali. They've left a trail of destruction over the past few years with huge attacks, a little bit like what we saw yesterday in Moscow. Now, the group was founded back in 2015 in Afghanistan by former members of the Taliban for whom that group was not extreme enough. They thought the Taliban was too moderate. So this is the same group that attacked Afghans who were trying desperately to leave their country as American troops withdrew back in 2021. You remember that horrendous attack. It killed as many as 170 civilians and 13 American servicemen at Kabul's International Airport. And just this year in January, they struck again, this time in Iran. And they claimed credit for a huge bombing that killed 84 people at a memorial procession for an Iranian commander and intelligence chief who had been killed by the Americans by a drone a few years earlier. And just like we're seeing with this attack in Moscow, there was a similar pattern. The U.S. says that they had warned the Iranians that terrorists were planning something and their warnings were ignored. And U.S. intelligence has said that last night's attacks, as you mentioned, that they were indeed related to that warning 2 weeks ago that apparently went unheeded.
See, I like MSNBC because they're so obviously a megaphone for the intelligence community with Brennan I mean, it's so obvious that, oh, well, it's ISIS. It's ISIS-K. It's ISIS. But there's skepticism, Stephanie Ruhle, favorite of the boys at the Goldman Sachs trading floor.
Well, what about skepticism around ISIS? Yes, they've claimed responsibility, but they did not prove any. They didn't provide any proof of this. And the claim did come from an ISIS-affiliated news agency on Telegram. Again, not exactly a trusted source.
That's correct, Stephanie. It's not exactly a trusted source. They have executed other attacks and taken claim for them. Some of the accounts that I've seen are remarkably, you know, credible in the sense that they do take claim and they do annotate attacks that happen around the world and take responsibility for it.
So that's it. That's the source. Some dude on Telegram. Oh, ISIS. Come on. I always wonder why Telegram is still an app. That's got to be the op app.
That's the reason.
It's the op app is what it is. Unbelievable. Okay, one more from MSNBC.
I looked up a little bit about the group that was performing. It's a rock band that's been around since the late 70s called Picnic. They actually were banned from performing in the Ukraine since 2016 because they performed in Crimea. Do you think that there was any sort of symbolism to this? Do you think that not just the venue, but the band had anything to do with this?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you really think, again, it's more likely to be ISIS because it doesn't fit the strategy of the Ukrainian army?
They should have asked me to answer this question. Oh, I can tell you all about the rock band Picnic. Yes, indeed.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know the answer. No. I do know the band, by the way.
I love the band.
Kind of a, you know, kind of hippie band from the, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. It's not a pro-Putin kind of group that would be there if I were guesstimating. But I don't know of any particular reason why they would strike there, other than the fact that the owner of this complex is close to Mr. Putin. So maybe that is why they targeted this particular place.
Oh, goodness gracious. Just filling up the airwaves, people. Wasting my time. I'd like to reclaim some of my time from all this nonsense. And in the meantime, it was quite destructive. Man, the fire was just, that was a nice looking building too.
Yeah.
Downtown Moscow is modern looking.
Well, that wasn't downtown. That thing's pretty much on the outskirts. Oh,
it's but even when you see shots of Moscow, it's like, wow, they got some pretty cool buildings.
Well, that's what Tucker says, you know.
Oh, well, bleh.
Last time I was there, it was very Soviet-ish.
Oh, the hotel that I stayed in 1988 is closed. Doesn't even exist.
I stayed at the Mir. It was just spelled M-N backwards N-R.
Hmm.
And that place was known as a place where all the diplomats stayed.
By the way, Tucker was just there. Coincidence? I did pick up a great
interesting point.
Yeah, just
nobody's saying. Picked up on.
No, of course not. I got this clip, which was a nice one. It's from a professor. His name is Ola Tunander. He is, I believe, Norwegian, and he was speaking at a conference called the Totalitarian Media Machine. Now he's not
like that.
Yeah. Well, I've put the link to the full video in the show notes. He's not a great speaker. I had to cut out a lot. It's not his native tongue, but he gives us the genesis of two of our favorite terms. One, Putin's aggression. And the number one, full-scale invasion.
Yeah.
He has the genesis of these two terms.
How could you succeed to get the media to think in these terms? What happened was that they spoke about a full-scale invasion, Putin's full-scale invasion. That was said by Dmytro Kuleba in the early morning, the 24th of February, exactly 2 years ago. And every journalist quoted him. And you know, if you listen to the news in Norway and probably in other countries, when they start to speak about Ukraine, they start with the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. You couldn't mention the Ukraine or the war in Ukraine without saying the full-scale invasion. And the same is about the unprovoked attack. Where does it come from? early in the morning, the 24th of February, Boris Johnson spoke about Putin's unprovoked attack on Ukraine. And then later on in the day, President Biden spoke about Russia's unprovoked attack on Ukraine. It's clear that, you know, if you will succeed, you have to create a truth from the very early hours. I mean, so-called truth. I mean, a hegemonic discourse, you could say. You have to create it from the very early hours of the event, of the war. And that was what was done. The day before, or one day and a half before, he was at the White House. So he met President Biden, and he met Secretary Austin. But this means they have briefed him about, you know, more or less what to say.
Yeah. So we need to pay attention to these things that are put into the media at the beginning of the crisis of the event, such as ISIS.
Unprovoked attack. Well, we picked up on unprovoked attack.
Yes.
And full-scale invasion pretty quickly, because the unprovoked part is bogus.
Yeah.
And I think we've developed that thesis pretty.
Yeah, no, that guy goes into it and he says, you know, that's obviously not true.
Yeah, well, it's been analyzed to death, the unprovoked part.
Yeah. I just wish I could find. Oh, wow, this is interesting. You know that Jack Posobiec guy?
Yeah.
Naval intelligence.
Yeah.
Always on Banyan's War Room.
Yeah, he's there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you're naval intelligence, can you ever not be naval intelligence after that?
Well, generally, that's where Woodward came from.
Oh, another fine specimen.
And so Woodward was naval intelligence, and who he's working for now, but he's the one, somebody's writing his books, because it's not possible to do the books he does unless you have sources that are deep within the intelligence agencies.
Well, he makes an interesting point about Ukraine's involvement in this Russian catastrophe at the Crocus, which is, you know, you're thinking right now that Ukraine was doing this, and he has an interesting point about that.
Well, this is what they do, Alex. They'll tell you they're going to attack Russia. You've got the U.S. Embassy again coming out 2 weeks ago, and there were people had posted it at the time that this is a very strange. Usually when the U.S. Embassy puts out, you know, specific responses, the State Department warnings, guidance, they'll say, you know, situations are destabilizing. Be careful. Don't, you know, avoid these areas, that kind of thing. No, this was specific. It was specific events. It was a specific time frame, 48 hours. Do not go to concerts. It specifically said concerts and specifically said extremists. Now, we're also being told, Alex, right now, that the White House itself is distancing itself from the attack, saying that there's no knowledge of Ukraine or any Ukrainians being involved. I said, wow, that's a very quick investigation that you were able to conduct. Amazing that you already know exactly what took place as it's
currently just like the Russians blew up Nord Stream, just like they blamed the Russians for Nord Stream day one.
But Alex, here's the key. The key to this is people need to understand that if the U.S., right, the U.S. government absolutely must distance themselves from this attack, because if there is a link to Ukraine in this, then that means that the money that the Congress is currently spending going to send up to the Senate, send to the White House for the signature, is going to fund attacks like this around the world. Attacks on civilians, attacks on women, attacks on people going to concerts. That means that the United States, if this is true, that means that if the United States is involved in this, then guess what, boys and girls? Then that would mean that the United States was funding terrorism and terrorist attacks around the world.
Good point.
Yeah. That was InfoWars.
Yes, yes.
You said War Room.
No, I said he's been on War Room.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. No. This was, of course, is InfoWars. It's where we get all our information from.
Rarely, thank God.
So, man, you know, there's a lot going on. I mean, I would extrapolate it differently. No, we use Russia's money that we stole from Euroclear to fund Ukraine. And so the indirectly, it's Russia's fault. They're funding terrorism. Yeah.
Well, that would be some logic I would expect in one of the back rooms.
Somewhere. It's also very sad. You know, are we now, what do you think? Are we now in a Cold War? I mean, Putin hasn't, he says Ukraine, but.
I don't know. It's all dependent on whether Trump gets elected.
Ugh.
And I don't even know if I'm correct on that. Trump could have been co-opted by now. We have no idea. The whole thing nothing could change.
Well,
I think you take that position generally.
The Trump thing is great now, because at the last hour, a Hail Mary. It's beautiful. He needs, $500 million. Oh, cash. Baby.
Donald Trump's social media platform is seeking to merge with a little-known public company. That company's shareholders are scheduled to vote on the merger later this morning.
It's a shell company. It was specifically created to merge with Trump's company. In markets, it's called a backdoor listing. It's a way to go public in a different way from a traditional IPO. And later this morning, shareholders need to actually approve the merger. The big question is if we're going to see enough shareholders show up to vote. If that goes through, though, that would be fantastic news for President Trump. Yeah. He would own over 50% of the new company. That would be worth over $3 billion. That's three with a B, a huge chunk of change.
Okay, so $3 billion, like you said, a huge chunk of change. Is Truth Social worth that much?
No, it is not. I mean, let's look at the numbers. This is a company that only had over $3 million in sales for the first 9 months of last year. That's three with an M this time. And he lost nearly $50 million. Nonetheless, the value here is President Trump. Without Trump, there is no Truth Social. He has millions of supporters. And right now, a lot of the shareholders in the deal are believed to be Trump supporters. They are the true believers. They are people who want to support Trump no matter what, and they will happily buy the shares.
How soon will those shares start trading?
Well, if the shareholders do approve the deal today, it would start trading as a new company by next week. It could be very volatile, I'm told, but hey, it would now be officially called Trump Media and Technology Group with a new stock symbol, DJT. Donald J. Trump.
This is beautiful. So.
These reports are really bogative.
Oh, yeah.
For one thing.
It's not called a backdoor listing. It's a SPAC.
It's a SPAC, and nobody wants to use that because it's kind of discredited, but it still works.
I have some more.
And this idea that it's worthless or it's like overvalued at three or six or whatever. It overlooks the fact that Reddit, which has never made a nickel, even though Truth Social has made $1 million, Reddit hasn't made a nickel, is worth $9.5 billion as of today.
Let me play the Reddit clip.
Social media company Reddit rose 48% yesterday. Chief Operating Officer Jen Wong says the artificial revolution is at the center of Reddit's value proposition.
I love the artificial revolution, not artificial
value proposition.
What?
That's what she said. One of those buzzwords, which I just detest.
Yes, yeah, but...
Which is, what's your value proposition for the No Agenda show?
But wait, then she says the artificial revolution. She forgets the intelligence word.
She combined it with value proposition, which makes no sense.
Chief Operating Officer Jen Wong says the artificial revolution is at the center of Reddit's value proposition.
Large language models need data to train on. And when you look at Reddit's corpus, 19 years of human experience organized by topic with moderation and relevance, that's incredibly important to building both a chat capability and the freshness of information. So that's an area where, we see opportunity.
And Reddit's Jen Wong tells Bloomberg the firm is also in the early stages of allowing third parties to license access to data on the platform.
Yes, Reddit brings a fresh corpus to the table.
The corpse.
Fresh. This is great. Wow. How bad is AI going to suck if it's built on Reddit?
Well, let's before you go there, I do want to play my one AI clip.
Oh, bro. Okay. We'd have to go back, though. We got to go back to Trump in a moment. Okay.
This actually relates to Trump.
All right. Where is it?
Michael Cohen uses AI.
Oh, no. Oh, here we go.
In New York, a federal judge won't sanction Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen. Cohen accidentally gave his lawyer fake case citations generated by artificial intelligence. The judge called it embarrassing. But he refused to end Cohen's supervised release. Cohen pleaded guilty in 2018 to campaign finance violations and tax evasion.
I thought we knew this. I thought this was already an old story. Yes,
we did know it, but it hasn't been. We didn't play this clip. This is using AI to do legal briefs. It just makes stuff up.
Yeah. Artificial intelligence is a direct insult to God. It's no good. All right, let's go back to MSNBC. Let's talk about this SPAC.
That merger between Trump Social's parent company and Digital World Acquisitions was 2.5 years in the making. But there's a story to be told that provides some important context to Trump's current situation.
Yes.
And it involves TikTok, a conservative PAC, and a really rich man named Jeffrey Yass.
Yass
is the Pennsylvania billionaire owner of the financial firm Susquehanna International Group. He's a conservative mega donor and a major investor who has a $33 billion stake in ByteDance, the Chinese parent company that owns TikTok. Keep that in mind. Reuters identified Yass as the top donor of this election season, having donated, quote, more than $46 million to Republican causes so far in the 2024 election cycle. Data from political donations tracker Open Secrets shows.
Things get deep here. Things get interesting. Yass is a part of this.
Yass is also a major donor to the conservative nonprofit group Club for Growth. It was through Club for Growth that,
by the way, if we had a meeting, you and I would, I think, recommend not using that name. Club for Growth, it just doesn't sound right.
But it sounds like you've got a club and you're going to hit growth in the head with it.
Like you got a club foot and you need to grow. I don't know. It's just no good.
Trump and Yass recently got acquainted. And this is where things began to catch the critics' attention.
Ooh.
Trump had a falling out with Club for Growth during the 2022 midterms. The two camps split on whom to support in some key races. But earlier this year, they mended fences with a little help from Yass, who was one of the people who reached out to the former president about attending Club for Growth's retreat this year. So on March 1st, Donald Trump accepted the invitation and attended the group's retreat in Palm Beach. He even gave a speech at the gathering during which he gave Yass a shout out, calling the billionaire, quote, fantastic. Then, 6 days later, on March 7th, Trump suddenly announced that he'd changed his mind about TikTok and came out against banning it. This was a significant reversal, especially considering that in 2020, while he was still president, Donald Trump signed an executive order that stated, quote, the United States must take aggressive action against the owners of TikTok to protect our national security, end quote. Steve Bannon, who served in the Trump administration, suggested that Trump changed his stance for, quote, the Yass coin.
Oh, so maybe, because, of course, Trump will have a 6-month lockup on this reverse IPO, this SPAC deal. If it's worth $3 billion, I mean, this is kind of fun. If it's worth $3 billion, his stake, so the company's worth $6 billion, just the market cap based upon shares and price, even if it goes, you know, even if it goes down by half, you know, he can get a collar on that real easy. Anyway, if I had the money, well, yeah, here you go. Here's 500 million.
He could get a collar very easily. And again, that's what he'd do.
And this but wait,
is a little suspicious.
Every single Trumper out there is going to go and start buying the stock.
I would think
this will be like, what was that? What's that group?
Reddit.
Yeah. What's that group? the apes. The apes who buy who made AMC go through the roof.
Oh, you mean or GameStop?
Yeah. Those guys. Yeah, those guys.
The Philadelphia Inquirer reports, quote, Jeffrey Yass's firm was the largest institutional shareholder as of December in the company that has merged with Truth Social. Susquehanna has held the stock in Digital World Acquisitions Corp. since the merger between Digital World Acquisition Corp. and Trump Media was first announced in October of 2021.
All right, then I have two.
Well, we know Trump's a negotiator. That's what he claims. Yeah. This is a sneaky way to get out of everything.
But they all want him. They all want Letitia James to take his building. This is no fun. He can't pull this off at the end.
All week, his lawyers have insisted Donald Trump lacks the cash he needs to secure a bond to cover a nearly $500 million civil fraud judgment. Tonight, Trump is claiming he does. He just wants to spend it elsewhere. I currently have almost $500 million.
I have the money. I just choose not to spend it on this nonsense, okay? How about the things to buy?
He just wants to spend it elsewhere. I currently have almost $500 million in cash, Trump wrote on social media, a substantial amount of which I intended to use in my campaign. But Trump hasn't offered any proof he actually has $500 million
in
cash.
No evidence.
And Trump hasn't put any of his own money into his campaign since 2016.
No.
The former president has until Monday to post a bond, or New York Attorney General Letitia James told us she'll take action.
If he does not have funds to pay off the judgment, then we will seek judgment enforcement mechanisms in court, and we will ask the judge to seize his assets.
But tonight, a potentially new...
She's so breathy, isn't she? I will ask the court.
She's terrible. This is like...
She's breathy. She's breathy.
More and more inclined to, like, I've already bought into the idea that Mo brought up, which is that this is these black women are an outrage, and they're going to be taken down one by one.
Oh yeah. Everything they're doing with Trump, they put a black person in front. You stand there, you do it. If it works, mainly black woman. Maybe they got Eric Adams, kind of a black woman.
To pay off the judgment.
Well, yeah, but he's not really doing anything.
We'll seek judgment enforcement mechanisms in court, and we will ask the judge to seize his assets.
Oh, yeah. But tonight, a potentially new source of income for Trump.
Oh.
Investors voting today to take Trump's struggling social media company public. His stake on paper, roughly $3 billion.
That may sound like a windfall, David, but unless Trump gets special permission from shareholders, he cannot convert that stake into cash for 6 months.
Yeah, that's someone who doesn't know what they're talking about.
No, everybody doesn't know what they're not. One person has mentioned the potential for buying a collar.
Let's see.
And that is a very common way that's been done over the last decade or more for these IPO people.
Let's. I hate to do this to you. I did not get these clips. It's the Jones conglomerate. I do have a Brooks Capehart duo.
Well, this takes a lot of nerve.
Hey, it's your boy. It's Steve who did this, okay? It's your boy.
You know, with Steve is playing both sides of the fence. He's trying to leapfrog his brother.
Here we go. This is Brooks. These are two opposite sides of the spectrum, we're told. Brooks and Capehart on PBS NewsHour.
Meantime, Donald Trump needs to find $500 million, and he has to find it fairly quickly. He has until Monday to post a bond covering the full amount of the $454 million civil fraud judgment against him as he appeals this ruling. And if he can't somehow find the money, the New York AG, Letitia James, she might start seizing some of his assets to help cover that obligation. David, for any candidate running for public office, especially the presidency, who is short on cash and who has to find $454 million, that is a serious liability, and it also raises, in this case, some national security questions.
Oh!
Yeah, I mean, I have a few problems with the seizure. The Associated Press did a good survey. They looked back at 70 years of cases like this, and in cases where there was no clear victim, they've never seized assets before. And so if the people who claim a lot of this is a political witch hunt, I think that Associated Press, I found it kind of alarming that the Trump case is not being treated like the other cases. Nonetheless, it is what it is. And so he's got to raise a lot of money really fast. And can he do it through Truth Social, his very weird online social media outlet?
What's weird about it?
On the market, suddenly
it's weird. It's struggling. It's failing. It's no good. But Reddit is great with no money.
How can it be? It's actually got positive cash flow. My understanding.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It is what it is. And so he's got to raise a lot of money really fast. And can he do it through Truth Social? His very weird online social media outlet is on the market. Suddenly it would boost his net worth $3 billion, which is also troubling because it made, in the first 9 months of last year, it made $3.3 million and it's valued at $3 billion. Mm. So it looks to me like another form of fundraising disguised as investment. And that is already crooked. And then you take what a desperate Donald Trump is likely to do.
That's crooked.
It's crooked.
But Reddit and all these the classic IPOs out of Silicon Valley aren't.
I'm glad we're here to set the record straight.
So it looks to me like another form of fundraising disguised as investment. And that is already crooked. And then you take what a desperate Donald Trump is likely to do, do what his son-in-law did, go to the Saudis and get some money. It just opens up for a desperate Donald Trump all sorts of corrupt possibilities.
This is new, the desperate Donald. Desperate Donald. We haven't heard this one. It's nice alliteration. Desperate
Donald. Yeah, I want to mention that I watched this particular back and forth and found it unclippable, but okay, you may. But okay, go ahead.
And I have to disagree. I have to disagree with David. No, take the properties. If any of us at the table were in that situation, we would be in serious trouble. And, you know, it would be within the right of the attorney general to say, you know what, we're going to take your golf club or we're going to take your tower. And, you know, quite honestly, I would love to see the AG, the New York attorney general, do that, because then it would be like the most tangible sign for the nation, the world, and for Donald Trump, that you have been held accountable.
I love the,
okay.
I love the
that
take
was
your
worth
tower.
The clip.
Take your tower.
This asshole. This guy is the worst. When he's an editor at the Washington Post, he should be ashamed of himself.
I love when he said, "You took my tower. You sunk my battleship." I mean, take my tower. That's what they want. Oh man, what a show. What a show. Front row seat once again. And how many more months do we have of this nonsense?
Oh, if Trump wins the presidency, we have another 4 years.
We're going to have to retire after that. That's it. After Trump's first or second or whatever term it'll be, we're done. Exit. We have to exit. I don't think I can do it anymore. The media
pretty
is
intense.
The media is
it was
spinning
easier
out.
With COVID. It was easier with COVID, and we got more income during COVID than this analysis of the political situation, right. Which is horrible.
COVID was better.
COVID was better.
COVID was better than this nonsense.
Well, to break up the scheme of things, I do have a couple of clips that have not been picked up by any media in the United States. It's from Australia.
No, okay, good.
And it will be, because it's a great story, and I guarantee it will be on Gutfeld.
Oh, boy.
Because it's such a classic Gutfeld style of something to analyze. This is a story about a big sperm whale in Australia being tracked by 30 orcas in a pod, as they call them. Orcas are in a pod.
Yeah.
And these 30 orcas, and one of them was huge. We're going to get this whale, and this is the whale clips. Let's play clip one.
Now, a sperm whale off the coast of Western Australia has used a secret, actually a stinky weapon, to repel a pod of orcas. The whale released its massive bowels, triggering a poonami, which washed over the unsuspecting orcas.
Oh, there we are.
Marine biologist Jenna Tucker witnessed the dramatic defense mechanism. Oh, I wonder how she's coping now, and joins us now from Perth. Good morning. How are you coping?
Still processing everything, definitely.
So how unusual was this? Let's describe it as a defense mechanism.
So there definitely aren't very many recorded accounts of it around the world. Definitely wasn't expecting to see that kind of thing happen.
Oh, right. But stinky, but brutally effective, right?
Yeah. It actually did seem to work to sort of ward off a group of about 30 kilowatts. So, yeah, unusual but effective method.
Right. So, I mean, this is obviously a cause of great excitement for people who study these mammals. And obviously, I mean, the whole whale world is talking about it.
Yeah, an extremely rare event to witness, but also to be able to document the way that we could. We have some incredible wildlife photographers on board, and just a really significant thing to have been able to record in the detail that we did.
Tsunami!
Yes. Now, the... she is so shy, this woman, and she's embarrassed to be talking about this. Well, I have no idea.
But
why.
I mean, it's like we're childish. I mean, there's 15-year-olds in us. But these guys, like, he just keeps going pun after pun after pun.
I love the poonami.
Oh man.
But so this it wraps here with the no more good puns, but it's fascinating that the blast of poop in the faces of 30 orcas, they couldn't stand it, but they couldn't break rank, I guess, because they stay in these pods. And so they just scattered. They just, we're not putting up with this. And I'm wondering whether it was just a frightening aspect of being tracked by these killers, and maybe that's why you pooped, as opposed to doing it on purpose. But here we go.
Did the so-called tsunami last for long? We're just showing our viewers pictures of it, of some whales now, or did it quickly... how should we say, dissipate?
It did dissipate reasonably quickly, but we didn't stick around for too long. We actually, the orca pretty much moved off straight after that, and we followed them to try and get some more clues as to what had sort of gone on there.
Just looking at the size of sperm whales, I'm guessing the bowels of said sperm whales would be quite huge.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And a very strong defense mechanism as a result in terms of the amount of stuff that comes out.
Yeah, definitely that, and a combination of their really intense bonds and the way they grouped and huddled together and just wouldn't sort of break that formation. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating stuff. Jenna Take in Perth, thank you so much for getting up very early to talk about it, and we wish you all the best going through just how this happened, why this happened, and perhaps it may happen again with other sperm whales.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jenna.
Okay. I am now banning any more Poonami clips forever. Okay, one clip, sure. Two Poonami clips. All right, I'm gonna move it into Israel, Gaza.
That should have gotten clip of the day, by the way.
Not
complaints.
My goodness.
This is not in an American media at all yet, but you watch.
Oh, wow. Yes, of course, because why do we talk about anything useful? Poonami. There you go. That's right. Yeah, it's almost as useless as some of the stuff that they put into this spending bill.
There has been a lot of back and forth around, Democrats would call them like culture war add-ins to some of these things related to whether it's LGBTQ issues or trans issues. How has that sorted itself out? I mean, what would you point to in this package that Americans should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, if you see the statements.
Sounds like the same girl.
Is the Poonami girl? No, different
paying
girl.
Attention to.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, if you see the statements, as you mentioned, if you see the statements, both sides are like, this is a Democratic win. Republicans are like, this is a Republican win. But, you know, no one got like everything that they wanted. Right. And that's how these things work. I think, you know, Johnson is coming to terms that you're not going to get everything in it. But what they did get is 24% increase in migrant beds while they're waiting their immigration proceedings or removal from the country. They were able to get the removal of any flags that are not official U.S. flags, like LGBTQ pride flags from U.S. diplomatic sites. So that was a win.
So they're outlawing pride flags at U.S. diplomatic sites.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Why would somebody be putting an LGBTQ whatever it is flag on a U.S. embassy?
Where have you been? They do that all the time. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They do it all the time. What are we drinking?
Now that you ask.
Yeah, Phoebe wants to know.
The dog's asking.
Phoebe wants to know.
Lagunitas Phoebe. Brewing Hoppy Refresher Berry Lemon Flavored.
Ooh, that sounds good. Phoebe, good girl. Come here.
It does sound good.
Sounds
Let
good.
Let me taste it.
Phoebe.
Wait. Hoppy.
So we had a resolution which was vetoed by China and Russia for a ceasefire. So for once, it's not us.
In your reading of the resolution, because I found it a little bit ambiguous, would the ceasefire under this resolution go, you know, be called for, whether or not the hostages were at the same time released?
Look, Andrea.
This is the other black woman who will get blamed for everything. She is our ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas Greenfield.
What I've said to my colleagues here on in the Security Council, no ceasefire ever comes about because we call for a ceasefire. Ceasefires happen at the negotiating table. Anytime, anywhere in the world, ceasefires take place based on negotiations, and those negotiations are happening right now in Doha. They're still at the table. They're still working hard. And we're the ones that are there on the ground, really doing the hard work. Russia's not there. China is not there. They're not providing any options for finding a solution to get us there. They're not providing humanitarian assistance. We're still the largest contributor of humanitarian assistance, and we have people on the ground working every day to ensure that assistance get to the people in need. This resolution was not ambiguous. This resolution was clear. It called for a ceasefire. We want to see, as part of that, all hostages released. We want to see humanitarian assistance be provided to the suffering Palestinian people. It was that simple.
I love it. We provide the weapons and then we provide the assistance for the people targeted. It's great. It's a perfect system. And oh yes, again, we're paying for it. China and Russia, they weren't there in Doha. No, they were making other deals in the region.
Yemen's Houthi rebels have told China and Russia that their ships can pass through the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea safely. The Houthis have been attacking vessels off the Yemeni coast since November. The US and the UK have launched airstrikes on Houthi targets in retaliation. Several countries have deployed their naval forces to protect shipping in the trade route. Earlier this month, three crew members were killed when their ship was hit in a Houthi strike.
Well, how about that? So if you're a Chinese ship or Russian ship, no problem.
Yeah, go right through.
That is from not from U.S. News, by the way. Of course, of course.
I saw that story on U.S.
News. Oh, you did? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been played.
Back to MSNBC. We're back to Israel. Let's find out a way to bring in Trump.
But I wanted to say something else, especially about Jewish voters. What he said this week was not directed at them. Jewish voters represent a very small percentage of the American electorate. They vote heavily in favor of Democrats, and they tend to live in heavy blue states. They are not going to swing the election for him. What he said today about this week about Jewish voters was directed at his base, his evangelical Christian base, who he also needs to bring out to vote in November in order to win. And that base is both very, very pro-Israel for reasons related to the Christian religion and what they believe will be the second coming of Christ in Israel.
No.
But they're also real.
Bullshit.
Thanks for letting me know. We were just praying about that this morning. Let him come to Israel.
A strands of anti-Semitism in that base. And what he said this week basically said, you can't be Jewish and you can't be pro-Israel if you don't vote for me. That's both anti-Semitic and it very much signals to his base that he is all in on Israel. And that's a win-win for him.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Wow, what a roundabout way for saying a win-win. Didn't sound like it to me.
I know. So then we go to probably the best, you know, Joe Scarborough from Morning Joe, man, when those guys get read in, when they're told, like, okay, we're going to pivot, we're going to do this, we're going to change, we're moving away from that. They really go all in. And so to help out Biden, it's like Bibi Netanyahu is the worst thing ever. He's worse than a tsunami. Bibi Netanyahu is the problem in the world right now.
There is just an extraordinary a change of attitudes among Americans under 40. Extraordinary. And it is anti-Israel. And no, it's not just younger Americans on college campuses. It's just about, it is a lot of Americans under 40. And my children have been very, very concerned for their Jewish friends. They've been very, very concerned at how intense it has become. So I'm concerned about that. I'm also very concerned about civilians in Gaza. This idea that you want the United States and the world community to do something to stop an oncoming famine somehow makes you hate Israel. There are two words I'd like to say that I can't say on the air. Nobody has been more. And we had Jonathan Greenblatt come up. He'll tell you. And Jonathan may disagree with me on this issue. We'll see. But one thing you won't disagree with me on is that.
Yes.
I've been fighting against anti-Semitism my entire life.
Since World War II.
And my entire career in Congress and on television.
Oh, crap.
I've been really outspoken about it. And I'm, at least I'm really concerned.
How come we don't know this?
Well, wait. He's now.
He's that outspoken.
Now, see, now they plug him in. Turn up his spin cycle to 20.
I'm concerned about this. I'm concerned about Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm concerned about the fact that he knew where Hamas was getting its money in 2018. He refused to cut it off. I'm concerned that he sent his government to Doha 3 weeks before the attacks and said, give Hamas more money. I'm concerned that he continued to prop Hamas up. I'm concerned.
Talking points are great. I'm
concerned that Benjamin Netanyahu's government had Hamas's terrorist plans a year before the terrorist attack.
This is like Bibi Netanyahu is the worst thing.
And they did nothing. I'm concerned that Benjamin Netanyahu, after the attacks, did nothing for 6, 7, 8, 10 hours.
100 hours. Prepared.
I've never seen anything like it. It shattered my belief and everything I ever thought about Israel's ability to defend itself. And by the way, it's not that we've been wrong all these years. It's that Benjamin Netanyahu was in charge, and he led Israel to that point. And I'm very concerned that what he continues to do, whatever he can do to stay in power, because the second he's out of power, he's got 3 indictments. He might go to jail.
Trollum had a good point. What he really wants to say, Bibi Netanyahu is Trump in a yarmulke.
So it's a very simple equation. As long as the war continues, Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't have to worry about going to jail. The second the war ends, Benjamin Netanyahu has to worry about going to jail. Are we really going to tie Israel's future to this man and say, if those of us who love Israel, those of us who were taught in Sunday school when we were 5 years old, that Jews are God's chosen people and Israel is where they need to be protected because 6 million were slaughtered in the Holocaust.
Holocaust.
Are we not allowed to question Benjamin Netanyahu's motives? Because if not, that's pretty sick. And it's not in Israel's best interest.
Oh, Joe.
What kid went to Sunday school at the age of 5?
He did, apparently. There's a 30-second final clip here.
But, Mika, it is so offensive.
Offensive.
For Donald Trump to say.
Oh, here we go.
You can't be a good Jew.
Oh, my
God. And vote for Democrats.
Oh, my God.
It's like it's offensive.
It's not like saying, if you don't vote for me, you're not black.
People to say, you can't be a Zionist. and a supporter of Israel and a supporter of Jews and a fighter and defender of Jews and their right to exist where they want to exist.
That guy sounds like
unless
a Jew
you support
hater.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
He does.
The guy's full of crap. I got two clips about this.
Oh, my goodness.
Not about that idiot.
It's tiring. It's so tiring.
Let's go to France 24 and go to aid to Gaza, where we have our UN guy in Egypt giving a big speech.
Time to truly flood Gaza with life-saving aid. UN Chief Antonio Guterres appeals for a ceasefire, calling the starvation inside the enclave a moral outrage. Guterres spoke from the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing with Gaza. He made his way to the crossing a day after the UN Security Council failed to reach a consensus. Thousands of aid trucks are waiting in Egypt's North Sinai province to cross over to those living in desperately poor conditions. Nicholas Rushworth tells us more.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, on a visit to the Egyptian side of the Rafah crossing, said it was time to truly flood Gaza with life-saving aid. He renewed a call for an immediate ceasefire and said he wanted an ironclad commitment by Israel for total access for humanitarian goods to Gaza.
A long line of blocked red relief trucks on one side of the gates, the long shadow of starvation on the other. That is more than tragic. It is a moral outrage.
The UN's World Food Programme says Gazans are already starving to death, with famine projected by May in the northern part of the Gaza Strip.
There are a number of obstacles that the Israeli authorities have maintained that make it very difficult to reach the level of delivery that is necessary. The problem is not how many trucks enter. The problem is how can we distribute?
Distribute. Get your boot out of my butt.
Now, there's a thing that keeps cropping up in all these international reports, which is they're starving to death as we speak.
Yes.
But a famine will begin in May.
Oh, is that when it's scheduled?
Well, this is what it must be, because there's like they're starving to death right now.
Yes.
But a famine is expected to begin in May. There's a timetable for this sort of thing? And
yeah.
What's going on now that's not a famine?
It's on the media calendar. Let's see, what do we have in May, guys? For May, we've got famine scheduled. Okay, all right, that's good. We got famine for May.
And then the other thing, of course, to continue with the anti-Netanyahu op, we have the Tel Aviv protests, which I have a clip of.
Get them out of hell. Banners and Israeli flags poured out on the streets of Tel Aviv as thousands of people gathered this Saturday, demanding an immediate deal to release some 130 Israeli hostages in Gaza, as well as new elections in the country. Demonstrators are criticizing the way Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is handling the war against Hamas and demands the government to take responsibility. Netanyahu has vowed to go ahead with the planned offensive in Rafah, dubbed a mistake by the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Oh, they're all just playing a big, big theater. It's all set. No one buys this anymore. So, you know, they've blanketed us with so much punami that we don't even know what to care about. I know.
There's a show title.
I have a, sure, punami, and then let's put some cheesecake on the art. That's great. I have a supercut from Mayor Adams of New York.
I'm sure I would love to hear it.
Everyone knows that New York City is the Athens of America, is the Istanbul of America, is the keys of America, is the soul of America. We are the Tel Aviv of America. New York City is the Islamabad of America, the Zagreb of America. We are the Lima of America. New York City is Mexico City of America. This is the Dublin of America, New York City.
Well, somebody needs, really put a lot of work into that one.
Well, you need a new speechwriter.
Well, that's probably true.
So United Airlines is under attack, and rightfully so. I don't know if you received this, but I must have received five copies of this from something called the United Council, the members of Council 150. And it's a very long note. I put it in the show notes. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to just start off here. We, your elected ALPA, that's Airline Pilots Association representatives, feel is our unfortunate responsibility. It looks like a ChatGPT job, actually, to draw attention to several very concerning items. These issues have thus far been inadequately addressed. They pertain to the very core nature of our chosen profession. This is definitely ChatGPT. Simply put, our safety culture is under attack, and enough is enough. We cannot in good conscience continue to wait for our flight operations management team to choose safety over anything else. While their words make for great PR, their actions have not matched those words and have directly led to the unfortunate circumstance in which we presently find ourselves. The United Next growth plan has seen a staggering 30% growth in just a few short years. However, that growth has come with strings attached. It has come hand in hand with an orchestrated erosion of our safety culture and our profession's input into it. The FAA has similarly witnessed this and recently stepped in to take substantial action against United Airlines. Cue clip.
Increasing oversight of United Airlines. The decision follows a series of incidents, including a plane losing an external panel and another plane losing a tire during takeoff. United says the FAA will review work processes, manuals, and facilities. The agency will then determine if any changes are needed. The FAA says it is routine for its safety assurance system to monitor an airline's operations.
We have lost the ability to approve new line check pilots, issue type ratings, and have regulator imposed restrictions on our ability to operate and grow our airline. This is actually quite bad. Well, you can't do your own check rides. This is very bad. So I think the dude in the dress might want to reconsider his strategy.
Well, actually, a day ago, the United Airlines was halted by the FAA saying no new planes for you.
Yeah.
No soup for you.
That's right. Where does this leave us? Well, for starters, it leaves us as pilots under more scrutiny than ever before. We all need to reinvest in our safety culture and do so with vigor. Encourage each other on the flight decks to stop when rushed. Do your best to limit distractions, whatever it takes. How about this? How about not flying on United anymore? This doesn't sound like a good product or service, well, I should say.
I'd like to know where the board of directors is of the United Airlines to get rid of the CEO. It's obviously the CEO's problem.
I agree.
He's the one who sets the stage for all this stuff. That's what you do when you're CEO. You don't sit there. It's not, I mean, maybe spending too much time in the makeup room, but I mean, you don't have to spend all your time concerned about the next dress you wear.
No. It's troubling, to say the least. Troubling.
I was gonna say that I got a couple clips on squatters, which I think is disturbing. But this is an op of some sort, because squatting's been going on forever, as we pointed out in the last show.
Well, this is part of the political side of immigration. It's like, be afraid. Trump has the solution.
Yeah, but this was targeted American homeless more than the immigrants.
Oh, okay.
This is squatters. Clip one on NBC.
Do not touch me.
They're the house guests, no one invited.
You're trespassing and you're harassing me.
Squatters making themselves right at home.
Out of my house.
It's not your house.
They're people who take over mostly vacant properties that aren't theirs. One New York case even turning deadly.
Police now believe the 52-year-old Vitel was killed by squatters.
It's terrifying.
Patty Peoples says she discovered two women and kids in a Florida property she was preparing to sell and filmed her intense confrontations with them.
I had squatters. They did $40,000 worth of damage, stole appliances.
Bye.
At one point, even threatening her with a tire iron.
So you must want me to take this and break your phone.
She says it took more than a month to get them out.
How did you feel?
It is, quite frankly, one of the most frustrating, unfair experiences and frightening experiences of my life. The burden of proof was on me, not the renters. It's unfair.
Oh, my God.
unfair because squatters take advantage of laws meant to protect renters, often leaving homeowners helpless.
You shouldn't be trying to steal my house.
This video captured by New York's Eyewitness News has gone viral. A homeowner trying to force squatters out is then handcuffed by police and removed from her own home. No charges were filed.
Now, the problem I have with this story is that she says the renters. Why didn't she say squatters? Were these renters who stopped paying rent and then became squatters?
That is unclear. I know. I noticed the same thing. I didn't like it.
No.
But these laws are to prevent renters from being unnecessarily evicted, usually when a property's changing hands or something. They'll
is this
come
all,
in and it, say, get out.
Is this also a little bit of a holdover from the COVID era? Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Although I think that should be over by now. Let's play the second half.
New York attorney Ann Margaret Carrozza says squatting cases are on the rise due to more vacant properties and the high cost of housing.
How are they getting away with this?
If they pull out a fake lease or they pull out a fake deed, now it's a he said, she said.
Don't empower them.
Flash Shelton, who advises homeowners on how to push out squatters, says to protect your home, set up security cameras.
Your best protection is basically being able to document when someone comes in.
And call police as soon as you find someone.
Please support this bill.
Back in Florida, Patty is paving the way for change, advocating for new laws to fight squatting.
What do you want to say to the squatters around the country?
The gig is up. My hope is that within another year, squatting will be a pandemic that is on the decline.
I own this house.
Hoping her story empowers others to squash out the squatters. God. Valerie Castro, NBC News.
Oh, it's also violent.
It was a very violent report, not to mention
it's
it.
Very violent. I don't like it. It's disturbing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's disturbing me. You know, but it's a state by state thing, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
But it's an epidemic in New York, it seems. And I guess Florida's always had this issue.
Wild. Hey, we missed it.
Earth Hour?
Yes, we missed it again. Every year we miss Earth Hour. I always want to, participate and turn off my studio for an hour to help.
Yeah, you do.
To help save the Earth.
I have a clip.
And finally, going dark to raise awareness of conservation and climate change issues, millions of people around the world have marked Earth Hour 2024, the world's largest grassroots movement for the environment. From 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. local time, lights were and will be turned off around the globe. Nick Rushworth tells us more.
The Eiffel Tower in Paris dimmed for Earth Hour. Various landmarks worldwide also went lights out, including in Bangkok and in Kolkata, as a symbolic commitment to tackling climate change. During Earth Hour, individuals and businesses are encouraged to turn off non-essential lights for 1 hour from 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. local time. Climate activists gathered in Nicosia in Cyprus to express their concern about the climate emergency.
For the last 12 years, we've turned off the lights on the last Saturday in March to send a message that in one symbolic hour, we can make a real difference to the environment and society for the benefit of people.
Our message is that we need to take climate measures to reduce pollution to achieve the goals that Cyprus and the EU have set for the fight against climate change.
The World Wildlife Fund says giving 1 hour for the Earth can help bring our world back to life.
That's funny. Bring it back to life. The world is dead.
I got that clip before Earth Hour, and I went outside to see what would happen at 8:30 in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah, the libtard area of California.
Nothing.
No, of course not. Who remembers the last Saturday in March? What's this second clip?
I have a 5-second clip that says suggestions, and I don't remember what this is.
It says that that hour can be spent on a range of activities, from giving a donation to giving a donation.
Oh, giving a donation.
It suggests giving a donation to the No Agenda show.
Well, before we go to that, I'm glad you brought the Earth Hour clip, because there is a very good documentary on YouTube, which it makes it even better because it's just out there. It's called Climate the Movie. It's about it's about an hour and 15 minutes long. I watched the whole thing. There is, for the long time, No Agenda producers, nothing new. Some familiar faces, like the one, you know, the co-founder of Greenpeace. And but what is good is it lays out in some good detail, but very accessible to all. And they have like Harvard guys, Yale, Nobel Prize winners, all these people going, this is a hoax. It's not true. They're jacking the charts. They're jacking the temperature. They're lying. The, you know, they look at the geological studies. You know, they, we're actually in a, in an ice age, and it is by around 2030, it's going to start getting cooler, which of course shows you why they're so crazy about getting it done now. And all of these intellectual scientists all laugh about the idea that we're going to die because it's 2 degrees warmer, whereas, you know, the temperature varies 5 up or 5 down. The median is, you know, around 1 in variance. But what they do hammer home is that this is, it's about control. And I'm just going to have to keep hammering on this, because it's not just about, you know, what I like what they all say universally is, well, if it's a global problem, you need a global government to take care of it. And that, and we haven't quite gotten there, but we're getting very close. And there's so much money involved that they're not going to stop. And it is all about control, such as Biden's EPA, well, it's our EPA, has just rolled out USA auto mandates forcing EVs to be two-thirds of all passenger vehicles. Two-thirds.
They'll be made by
China.
BYD and NIO, N-I-O, out of Mexico, and they'll flood our country with them and take out all of our EV
makers. Oh, yeah, and guess who's the biggest investor in this scam? BlackRock. Yep.
Or Blackstone.
No, it's BlackRock is what I have. That's someone's bumping something on your side. It's going
I'm playing with it right now, trying to get it to duplicate, and it did.
You succeeded. And then here's an example of how this is going to, and Sir Gene sent this to me. Tesla revises late night driving and its effect on safety score. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. So, so Tesla tracking your driving, pay attention, Tesla drivers, track your driving, and they give you a safety score based upon, you know, a whole bunch of factors. Like, did you have short stops, you know, like a slam on the brakes. Now they've adjusted it. They've updated their late night driving to be risk weighted based on driving from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Previously, it was 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. The impact of late night driving on your safety score will depend on the proportion of time spent driving in each hour between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. Tesla uses 8 different factors to determine a safety score. Forward collision warnings per 1,000 non-autopilot miles, hard braking, aggressive turning, unsafe following, excessive speed, late night driving, forced autopilot disengagement, and unbuckled driving. And so I said, wow, that's really quite creepy. I guess they're going to be selling this to the insurance companies who already don't want to insure EVs because, you know, they tend to burn down houses. And Gene informs me, oh no, they're going to launch their own insurance. This is your future. We need to stop this insanity.
I like aggressive turning.
I'm with you on that.
It's fun.
It's great. Donuts, baby. Donuts. But this is all of this. This is just friendly little Elon. Just Elon. He's a good guy. No, he's not a good guy. He is a shill for this kind of stuff. It's not good. We cannot let government entities track all of our so-called climate-based activities. In this case, it's still a climate-based car based on some phony baloney calculation, which we've been through. I don't remember exactly. You know, you had that, I think, at one point. How they calculate the actual pollution made by these EVs. What was that again? It was like something that they snuck.
Yeah, it was based on how much waste of energy and resources to make the batteries and the car and the whole thing. It's complicated.
Right. But it's also complicated for a reason, because none of it's true. None of it's true.
Well, no, the fact that it costs a lot of money to make an EV is not untrue.
Mm. Anyway, I had a rancher out here yesterday from Colorado, Colorado Craft Beef. And he says, it's unbelievable what's happening. And we're losing our food supply. We really are. You've got to start taking a look at where you're going to get your food from, because it's not going to be from it's not going to be beef in the future.
One of our producers, who's also a beef guy, went up to the panhandle. He said he had some land up there. He says that big fire that took place in Texas wiped out a bunch of beef producers. He says those people are not coming back.
That was me on the last show. Texas Slim told me.
I had the note too.
Texas Slim told me on the phone. I didn't have a note.
No, I read a note from some guy.
That wouldn't surprise me. No, because they can't finance their herd anymore.
The banks are of no help.
No, I mean, interest rates are of no help. So we have to keep hammering, because it's just become a joke, a punchline. Oh, yeah, you know, whatever. Oh, yeah, it's just it's climate change. No one believes in it. But they're not stopping. They're not stopping. They're going to go until they have total control of us. That's what all those ULEZ zones were in the UK. And God bless the Brits, you know, the Londoners. No, we're taking that down. We're ripping that stuff down. We're not going to let you force us into some kind of phony baloney climate change zone where we can't drive or can only drive 3 miles an hour. It's total control, and yet we have to resist. You must resist. Me much.
Yeah, good
we
luck.
Much this. Yeah. No, you say that. I still have some fight left in me. I still have some fight left in me. And then, wow, this is something that just came across the wire. The vape wars. Science Direct comes out with an interesting article. And so what is vaping? Vaping is, in essence, a nicotine delivery system with a fun little taste. And we were told, oh, no, these kids are getting hooked on nicotine. It's no good. The flavors, they're being marketed to five-year-old kids want to have strawberry. They're going to vape. Well, I didn't know this. Nicotine inhibits the amygdala, the VTA to, what is VTA? What is VTA? Ventral tegmental area to the amygdala dopamine pathway to promote anxiety. So when you vape, you have less anxiety.
Well, that's why people smoke.
Right. Well, we already got rid of that, but they wanted the kids to stop vaping because it was a cheap nicotine delivery system and they're not getting all jacked. We need them spun up and spun out and angry and hooked
and
to
voting Democrat.
Exactly. With that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the sea in the fresh corpus. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. Dvorak.
In the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning, all ships at sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls in the troll room. Stick your hands up there, trolls. Let me count you. There we go. I have good news. Trolls are up. We're up 40 trolls. We had we're up more. We had 1994 on the last show, Sunday show. Today, 2,064. So we are actually up 70 trolls. That's pretty good.
That's not bad. That's good. I like that number.
70 extra trolls. Hello, trolls. They are checking us out at trollroom.io, where you can listen to this podcast live on Thursdays and Sundays. The good part is about to come because, you know, we got extra clips and extra fun stuff during these donation segments, including, may I say, a big congratulations to Speed Racer, Ashlyn Speed, running with the No Agenda colors on her number 32 F1600 race monster. She won this weekend.
She's amazing.
Yes, she actually, during qualifying, she broke the track record by half a second in qualifying, which unfortunately doesn't count as official. In the race, she was only off of the track record by 0.3 seconds, and that's because the clouds had rolled in, which, does that slow down your car, clouds?
Well, yeah, because it's that's powered, solar powered.
I'm sure it has something to do with the temperature of the track or the tires, or I think, I don't know. We got a report from her dad, Greg, and good to see No Agenda people out there. We're yelling in the morning. She was on the track, which is fantastic. Love that. The No Agenda logo proudly displayed on the car there, which I just love that. I just love that we have a winning race mobile.
It's
a race mobile.
And it goes around and around.
She is going F1 for sure. I mean, and she's perfect for it. I love the cowboy hat, the whole vibe she's got. Speed Racer, Ashlyn Speed, No Agenda. And we've been with her from day one, ever since the carts.
This is true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. And we're happy that the car owner let us put our logo, keep the logo on there, because we're not paying. But if you'd like your logo on it, there's an opportunity, I'm sure. So that's just one way that you can show some love to the No Agenda show, value for value. I did want to mention that you can join the trolls at trollroom.io, listen live. There are many ways to get alerted. We always send out a bat signal on Twitter and on Mastodon, the Fediverse, through ActivityPub. You can hear about us there. But if you get a modern podcast app, I'm just saying this might be a great way to keep podcasting free and open, because they're coming for you.
Coming for everybody.
They are coming for everybody. But this is still within the independent open source podcast realm. And you can listen to the live stream in these modern podcast apps, which you can find at podcasting2.org or podcastapps.com, if that's easier for you to remember. And today I want to promote Podcast Addict, which has been around for a long time. Podcast Addict, you know, was already an established app, and they decided, you know what? We're not going to suck off that Apple database. We're coming to the free and open guys at Podcasting 2.0. And when we publish a show, any show that's published on any show that's worth its weight in gold, of course, which is hundreds of thousands of shows, that updates within 90 seconds on your app. No longer do you have to wait for 45 minutes, an hour, even 15 minutes is annoying. So go to podcasting2.org to find out more. So back to value for value, which, it's a donation drive now for NPR. Man, those guys are annoying how they do it. You know,
tell me more.
Well, this is like, you know, they sound so smug. But first of all, they have ads. They have ads. They run ads. And then they tell you, well, you've got to support us. But you're running ads. I don't get it. You're running ads. Well, but, you know, you're really the primary source of the funding. Well, how about the ad market?
Seems unlikely.
I don't believe it for a second. They just want you to give them $50 to get a dumb tote bag or a mug. No. No. And then how good is it? You know, people don't, and they want you to subscribe. We want a subscription. This is the biggest mistake that they've made. And the streaming guys, they're falling apart right now. In fact, you know, actually had the Wall Street Journal did a whole bit on this. And, you know, so we consider this to be value for value. Actually, we pioneered it. The whole idea is we give you all the value we've got, everything we have. We're not holding back. There's no special little bonus content or premium content that you can get somewhere else. No, we can leave the whole show. You don't have to send us anything. Oh, by the way, they
don't. And most people don't.
No, that's right. that's what's so great about it. But if you listen to, you know, people who want you to subscribe to something, or, you know, like the streamer, this is falling apart, this whole model, because people can't afford it anymore. It's like, you can't afford to subscribe to your 5 or 10 favorite podcasts. What's it going to be, $50 a month, $200 a month for your premium content? No, we want you to send value when you feel it's appropriate and when you can afford it. You know, and then please send what you think is the right value, which we can't determine that. That's not on us. We don't know how much what's valuable to you. But listen to
the individual. Yes.
Yeah. Listen to this Wall Street about the streaming wars.
First, I want to talk about a relatively new trend you reported on, and that is consumers canceling their streaming subscriptions. Does that have to do with the price hikes we've seen introduced by a number of streaming services?
So you see customers starting to get to a point where their streaming budget, where they're realizing that it's approaching what cable used to be, or just starting to feel really expensive and needy. And so they're saying, what do I actually need? What am I actually spending my time on? And because those streamers have raised prices, they have kept the simplicity of being able to easily turn them on and off. A lot more consumers have gotten savvier about saying, you know what, I'm going to binge this on Hulu and then I'm going to turn it off, or I'm going to binge this next season on Netflix and then I won't need it again for 2 months until this next show comes out. So I think a much savvier consumer has emerged. And also with inflation and just the rising cost of living, households are saying, how much am I actually spending on entertainment and am I getting full value out of it?
Oh, full value. There you go. See, people are getting smart. They want value. So if you get any value from our podcast, and maybe you need 5 shows, maybe you need a month's worth of shows. Like, oh, you know what? That was valuable to me. Then you send something back. You can always give us value by promoting the show, by hitting people in the mouth, by organizing meetups. There's many ways you can contribute all the time to the entire. Remember, you're not listeners. You're not an audience who we're saying, hey, you subscribe to our app. No, you're producers. You're part of the product. That's the postmodern avenue that we took. And it's been working okay for 16 years. But yes, it's about 2 to 3% who actually support us financially. So consider that. No tote bag, no mug, nothing. You know, you don't have to binge anything. Just listen to our show. If it's valuable to you, send it back to us. Now, before we thank our treasure donors, we have time and talent in the form of the artists. Now, we believe that this is a very valuable addition to the show. And we've been doing it almost as long as we've had this show. And only in the last year or two have a couple other podcasts started doing it. Why? Because they don't have the producers that we do. There's no way, because they haven't set it up. They're just like, you're a stupid listener. Listen to my ads. I'm going to interrupt the show.
Listen to my ads.
Yeah. Click on the link. Smash the subscribe button. Oh, no. So we want to thank the artist who we chose art from on the previous episode. That was episode 1644. And that was...
Link.
We titled that one Shock Opera. Shock Opera. And again, it was the art that made us laugh right off the bat. Tanta Neal comes flying back in with a total winner, a red hat, which we would say would be like a MAGA hat, with Bloodbath 24 logo on it. It was just, there was nothing that even came close, I don't think. It was so good.
Well, you did. We did like the can, the lobster, the can, like the cicada in a can by Correct the Record. That was pretty funny.
And we went back and forth and we said, well, we both laughed the minute we saw that hat. And that's always kind of that's usually the one we just go for. Now, there was a lot of bloodbath type stuff. Also, I like the Tantanil did some other ones. She did the lobster from the tree with the cicada. Yes, correct the record. Cicada, the lobster of the tree with the can, was very good. Did you use it for the newsletter? You said you were going to use it for the newsletter.
No, I think I used some.
You didn't?
Was I cheesecake? I can't remember.
Don't be sad at all. Another corrector. Corrector Records coming in again with some stuff.
It's about time.
And also remember that most of these images are used by the clip custodian. I'm sorry, by Dreb Scott, who does our chapters. I said this because Clip Custodian is doing art now as well. Dreb Scott puts together chapters that when you use one of those modern podcast apps, you'll see the artwork change when we change a topic. And usually it's art that goes with the topic. It's really, it's worth it because that way you can, it's funny. It's an addition to the show. Or you can go to noagendaartgenerator.com. You can refresh live during the show, see what the artist is uploading as we're speaking, because we choose the art right after the show. But you can always submit something yourself if you want to be a part of the, of the time and the talent. We love it.
I'm going to provide another reminder to the artist that if there's, art is any way gruesome, and I would consider a cicada a gruesome thing to put as the artwork, and it's kind of repulsive, it won't get picked.
Why is a cicada gruesome?
Well, look at the three tree lobsters, the one from Scaramanga with a bunch of gruesome bugs coming out of a what looks like a French fry bag. No, it's not happening.
Wow. Well, gee.
You know about this rule.
Yeah, but I now we're into taste. I mean, I think the tree lobsters is not that gruesome.
Yeah.
I think the bloodbath with the Trump in it, that's kind of gruesome.
Yeah, well, that didn't get picked either, did it?
No, it wasn't even discussed. thank you again, Tantanil. We really appreciate everything you do. Now we go over to the treasure portion of the value. You're still banging like mad. I don't know what it is.
No, I'm here's the problem. It is the
2 hours and 30 minutes and he's found the problem.
No, I know what the problem is. I know what the problem is for the last couple of weeks. I just, at the end of the show, I know how to fix it. But then after the show's over, I turn off the machine and I go away and I forget all about it until the next show.
Oh.
So
like,
I have to.
It's like Earth Hour. You forget about Earth Hour every year.
And Earth Hour. Well, you're no better.
All right, everybody. What do you mean I'm no better? I don't have
you
a
haven't
bang.
Done anything about Earth Hour.
No, but I haven't. I'm not banging my mic.
I don't know that.
Everybody email John at Dvorak.org tonight.
You know the kind of email I get about the banging the mic?
Yo, let me guess. Adam needs to shut up about banging the mic.
No, keep banging the mic because it pisses off Adam. Very similar, but
hey,
no.
I'm in charge of audio on this in this partnership here. So when it sounds like crap, you know, you know, when something, let's say the website goes down, we've had some intermittent issues. You'll be texting me, website down, email, website down. Hey, it's down, it's not working, go fix it, blah, blah, blah. But when I say, hey, man, yeah, when I
lies, more lies.
This is why you tune into this segment, ladies and gentlemen. We kick it off with our top executive producer. We do executive producers and associate executive producers, $200 and above. We will read your note, and we're happy to do it because that is the feedback portion of Value for Value. Anonymous comes in with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's been a while since we've seen one of those. And it's a switcheroo. Happy birthday, Marcella, who will now be the new Dame of Metropolis. And that's the entire note. This is one of the best donations we've had all month.
I would say this year, at least.
Yes. Thank you, Anonymous. We appreciate that. And Marcella will become the new Dame of Metropolis.
Sir Adam's up next. But that's not you, although it's in this person is in Austin, Texas.
Well, how about that?
He's Sir Adam of Hooverville, to be exact. 7777. Switcheroo for Ed Sheevy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Attached a short story I remember reading in the eighth grade in 1998. And he's got a short story. The story depicts a mysterious yogurt shop with free addictive and fattening desserts. Then another mysterious shop appears that magically makes you slimmer. The author proposes that aliens may be the proprietors, but a better explanation is that that an allegory to our food / medical industrial complex. Health karma for all, Sir Adam of Hooverville.
Yes. Do you know that the big pharma and big ag or big food, that they often lobby together? It's sick, but it's true.
You've got karma.
And then we have Brett Samuel coming in from Dubai, Arab Emirates, in Jumeirah Park, to be exact, $500. And he says, okay, you got me. I am now Baron Bloodbath. So funny, Brett. Good. That's a good name. Baron Bloodbath. I like
you
it.
You might want to look on the upgrades and see if he's listed.
I thought he was.
Kevin Crosby's up, and he's in Texas, $350. Hi, my name is Kevin, and I would like to wish my beautiful wife, Frida Manzo, a happy 29th birthday. We are from Crosby, Texas, and we've been married for 8 years. She is the love of my life and a full-time mom of our three wonderful children. She has been listening to every episode of the show since discovering you during COVID.
Ah, and there it is.
Feels bad for not having ever donated. Could you please give her a de-douching?
You've been de-douched.
And I'd like to hear George Bush just send your cash.
You got it.
I know a lot of people want to send blankets or water. Just send your cash.
Linda of the Shire. Parts unknown. Might be from one of those Shire places in the UK. 333.33. The C attached note, and it's a switcheroo. Okay, so it's a switcheroo for, it'll be for James Campbell. Let me open up the note here. It's taking a second. It is a PDF after all. Here we go. 333.33, executive producership credit goes to James Campbell. Happy birthday, 27th of March. Please add to the birthday list. He hit me in the mouth 8 years ago, and I haven't been the same since. And he needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
And that's from Dame in Waiting, Linda of the Shire. Thanks for great No Agenda shows. Linda, we all met you at the Mallard Club on October 21st, 2023. James gave you a six-pack of hop water.
And that's what I'm drinking at the moment.
How about it? Also, sends an email of donation notes. I don't know about that. Did I get donation notes?
This is good enough.
It's what you get, Linda. Okay, and we will...
Sir Cucaracha's up. He's in Finland, Minnesota Nuts. 333.33, and he has a note that also came in on a sheet of paper because he sent in a check. And his note is, let me go to it. I'm going to scroll back. I've been seeing 33s everywhere, he writes. Lately, to the point that my 12-year-old daughter, Genevieve, told me I better donate soon.
That's a great kid. You know, it's these kids that go on to become racing car drivers and winners.
Please credit this towards her eventual damehood. I was catching up on episode 640 the other day when I heard Adam use the term V for V from the Ayn Rand in Atlas Shrugged, which happens to be the book I'm currently reading
for the next 3 months.
So when I picked it up that same night, I read on page 187, quote, I thought that one stood in the merit of one had to offer and gave value for value, unquote.
So that must have been where it came from. Because I know I was reading it back in the day.
You're nutso.
I still love that book. It's still it's a love story. Atlas Shrugged is one of the best love stories. Hank and Daphne, it's a love story.
He continues, I knew it was time to donate after all. Are there ever any coincidences in the kingdom? I do believe there is an Atlas Shrugged jingle. Thanks, guys. Sir Cucaracha of the Northwoods in Finland, Minnesota.
There are indeed no coincidences in the kingdom.
Atlas Shrugged. By Ayn Rand.
Beautiful. Holocene LLC, Bandera, Texas, 333. Hi, my name is Laura Allen. I work with Grimerica for events and tours. Hey. So how come there's no one, we don't have no agenda events and tours? These Canadians, they're passing us by. I work for Grimerica Events and Tours. I'm part of the Brothers of the Serpent podcast. We really love you guys and want to invite you and all No Agenda listeners to our Eclipse event. Uh-oh. Eclipse at the Canyon in Utopia.
This is one way to get it through.
Yeah. Eclipse in the Canyon in Utopia, Texas, April 6th to 9th, 2024. Go to contactthecabin.com. That's Darren and Graham's Grimerica Tour website. Oh, these guys have got, we don't have any of this stuff. And look for the Eclipse at the Canyon under current events. This will be somewhat like a meetup in the sense that many of our attendees are No Agenda listeners. What to expect at this event? Camping, music, comedians, live artists, telescopes, food trucks, cicada burgers, live presentations from Dave Matheson, Ben from Uncharted X, Luke Caverns, and Kyle and Russ from Brothers of the Serpent podcast. All of the speakers have been guests on the Grimerica show. Thank you for your courage, time, and efforts. Much love to you and your families, Laura Allen. Well, how about that?
Yeah.
That's, I got to say, I'm impressed. We've taught them well. We've taught them well.
No doubt about that.
Good work,
so
boys.
So Sam's up. He's in Sittingbourne, Kent, UK. Hi, TM, Adam, and John. Can I please change my knight name to Sir Tendez? Sir Tendez.
Of course.
Requesting jobs karma from that's not your new name. Requesting jobs karma for myself and health karma for my brother, and we're all gonna die for good measure, Sir Sam.
How come that's not his new name?
Because you'd think you should have said Sir Tendez.
Right, but that's gonna be his new name. He's already a sir, so he just wants to change it to Sir Tendez.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that's good.
Well, he said Sir Sam on the note.
I know, but he wants to change it.
Yeah, I think he should. I'm all for it.
You're dead naming him by calling him Sir Dave.
That's dead naming him.
That's an outrage. You can't be doing that.
We're all going to die.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. He wants jobs karma. Let me do that again. Let me be a little more professional.
We're all going to die.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. Yeah. Karma.
And we go to Bowman in San Antonio, Texas, 333, and he just says, thanks, y'all. Well, thank you. Best note of the bunch.
Sir, I'm Like That is up, and he's in Hebron, Kentucky, 24680. And he says, hey, gents, millennial private investment producer here. I saw so many Kara Swisher videos with Bill Maher on X, formerly known as Twitter. I just had to donate. I'm hoping to hear some of Adam's takes on these cringy clips.
Well, you heard one.
And without asking, you got it.
That's right.
But go on. She used this many times with Bill, he says. Also, I have essentially quit gambling. So this donation in some of what my losses could have been is amounts to what some of his losses could have been. By the way, I feel so much more free since I have stopped placing bets.
Oh, good.
I tell my friends that they're throwing money away towards Vegas about this, and they are astonished. I feel like I have been red-pilled on this. Some quick market commentary. Fed has pushed their dots to 3 cuts for 2024. I'd originally said no cuts in 2024, but now beginning to think 1 or 2 could be in store post-election. But again, this is the same Federal Reserve that projected 1.25 basis point hike for 2022 in November 2020. I don't know why he's telling us this. Hello, regional banking crisis. S&P 500 still hovering around all-time highs, and we are not yet touched by any major financing wave just yet.
Not
more
yet
to come.
Not
as
yet.
Always, I could always, can I please receive some DJT, don't trust China, and anything Revel.
Donald Trump, don't trust China. China is asshole.
Chrespict.
Sir Jeremy Champate. Champate. Oakville, Ontario, Canada. Associate Executive Producer, 233.99. ITM, gentlemen, according to my calculations, this donation takes me to Baronet. You're correct. I fly to Europe tomorrow on a B-789, so I need a... Oh, sorry. So I need to stay safe. Oh, a Boeing. Okay. I got you. Stay safe. It's funny how people are all, like, afraid, but yet they still fly them.
Yeah, sometimes it's the only plane you can get.
Good to see you. Please stay safe.
Okay. Good to see you. That's even better. Wait, don't we have a stay safe yell? That's better.
Stay safe!
There you go. Sir Jeremy Chumpate, Oakville, Ontario, Scandinavia. Thank you very much, sir.
Allison Ostrander in Round Rock, Texas.
Yeah.
And she comes in with a 233.33. And she sends a long note in, which I'll read as much as I can of. I haven't seen 33 pop up everywhere, so has everyone. And no, I had to donate. So I took some of my wins this week from trading to donate another stock market person.
Yeah, I like
to this. The best podcast in the universe. Speaking of trading, if anyone in Gitmo Nation would like to join me, I'm hosting a free webinar.
Webinar.
She says you can catch these different stocks. Go to simplertrading.com. /unlock/dark pool.
And unlock-dark-pool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of the webinar, I'll be walking through my current watch list using this setup so you all can see what I'm currently watching. Also, to anyone who comes through and with an ITM in the chat, you'll make my week. John, if you watch and like anything from the watch list, feel free to use it for the game on DH Unplugged, or you can find something to beat Toast, T-O-A-S-T.
Who's Toast?
I don't know. Jingles, it's going to be amazing. Jobs Karma and R2-D2 Karma's my son loves to mimic it. Wishing our favorite podcast and everyone else in Gitmo Nation all the best.
Oh my God, that is amazing!
Jobs, Jobs, Jobs and Jobs. Let's vote for Jobs.
You've got
karma. Woo, there we go. Shiron Doherty, Glasgow, from Lanarkshire.
Glasgow
in the GBs, 231.65. No notes, so you get a double up karma. Thank you very much.
You've got double up karma.
And now we have a note that says to be read by Adam. Let me see. Well, it's a Dutch guy, so he probably wants me to pronounce his name right. Wouter de Geus in Amersfoort. You know where that is, Amersfoort. Row of Ducks, 222.22. ITM, AC, and JCD. Some value here for your great show that really hit me in the mouth. Your media deconstructions, like recently regarding Trump's so-called bloodbath, are phenomenal. Big thank you to my friend Emil Bucker, who pointed me to your show. Yet, douchebag call-out for him, as he has still not contributed any value. It's long overdue. Douchebag. By the way, should you require a Java coder for your Slendermint.com endeavor? Yeah, have you seen the website? Slendermint.com? Build it. I'll point the DNS to it. Just drop me a mail or visit my website at degeus.io, degeus.io. Same holds for anyone else who has an ambitious exit strategy of their own and may need a Java coder hand to help get them going. Keep up the great work. With kind regards from the Netherlands, Wouter de Geus in Amersfoort. Thank you very much, Wouter.
Decoding in Java or JavaScript?
Well, he says Java. He says
Java, so it should be Java. Okay, let's wrap this associate executive producer with guess who? Linda Lupatkin from Lakewood, Colorado, $200, and she says Jobs Karma. And what she always says, which is for an exceptional resume, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's Imagemakers Inc. with a K, or just find Linda Lupatkin. She's the Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes on the producer list.
Jobs, 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 and Jobs. Let's vote for Jobs.
You've got karma.
And that wraps up our executive and associate executive producer for episode 1645. Yes, 1645. Yep. These are forever credits. They're good for the rest of your life on this earth and beyond. although not transferable, you can all, even when you're dead, your children, your grandchildren can say, remember, grandpa, grandma was a producer, executive producer, the No Agenda Show, episode 1645. And you should codify that on your LinkedIn profile, do it in your social media profiles. And of course, you can put on resumes or add it to imdb.com. If you don't already have one of those credits, you can now become, just like the Hollywood bigwigs, an executive or associate executive producer in the database. We appreciate you so much, as well as people who come in under $50. We don't mention any of those under 50. We read the notes 200 and above, and sometimes we pick something up in between if we think it's worth mentioning. And as always, we thank everyone who comes in with the sustaining donations, which are subscriptions you can set up yourself. There's a number of suggestions at Dvorak.org or noagendadonations.com. We got meetups, we got nightings, we got damings, we got title changes, birthdays. John's going to take us through the 50s right now.
Yes, starting with Ian Field, 100. Christian Gulick in Lakeland, Ohio, 8008, followed by Kevin McLaughlin, the Duke of Archduke of Luna, lover of American boobs, with 8008, the boob donation, 1645, booby writes. Jason Maurer in Vancouver, Washington, 8008, Sir Camera Chris, 7155, and he says, this is actually 6789 plus fees. Let's notice the fees. The fees for anything you do online.
It's pretty crazy. Amounts of
a few bucks. If you send a check,
there's no fees.
Well, it after 100 checks, they start charging. And what do you think the fee is compared to this, which is like $5? 15 cents.
Oh, what a difference.
Maximum fee. Sir David, call sign Barney in North Turramura.
Did you say Sir Camera Chris has a birthday for Anya? Palm Sunday and show day lands on her fifth birthday. It's his daughter. Okay, we got her. She's on the list.
71.55 for camera. Sir David, call sign Barney in North Turramura, New South Wales, 6325. Matthew Elwart in Weatherford, Texas, 6006. Row in Cumming, Georgia, 60. Put a Jobs Karma in at the end for your daughter graduating from the University of Georgia. Eleanor Currit in Klawock, Alaska.
Wow.
De-douche my husband, Daniel.
Oh, we can do this.
You've been de-douched.
She got a really long note there, but she did.
Yeah, say, we'll give you the trailer selling karma at the end of the list.
Yes,
and Adam's good about that.
And welcome to the League of Jesus Freaks.
5856. Scott Lapierre in South Glastonbury, Connecticut. 5616. And he should be on the birthday list. I guess he is.
I believe he's
light yellow.
I believe he is. He also did the fees. Thank you.
Yeah. Sir Darius Unity in Essex, Maryland, 5555.
He has a new human resource as of the 18th of March.
Sarah Steinlin in Brentwood, Tennessee, 5510. Steinlein, yeah. John Jolly in Yukon, Oklahoma, 5444. John Matero in Media, Pennsylvania.
He says that's a war mode donation. What does that even mean?
5377. I have no idea. Wants a shout out to Billy and Spud.
Nice, Bud.
Aaron Groan in Mead, Nebraska, 5272. Stephen Veneman in parts unknown, 5271. Baron Henry in Rancho Palos Verdes, 5242. Forrest Martin, parts unknown, 5005. And now we have the $50 donors. There's not a lot of them today. In fact, this whole list is quite short. Starting with Michael Scorsicora in New Richmond, Wisconsin. Alexa Delgado in Aptos. Michael Romano in Sebastopol. Ah, Gaucho Woodworking. Go check them out. They're in Redondo Beach. They have a website. James Farrell in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Kara Paravel in San Rafael, California. Brian Hummel in Wimberley, Texas. Charles Boyd in San Marcos, Texas. Samuel Kennerday in North Riverside, Illinois, and in parts unknown, Michael Statham. $50 from him. We want to thank all these people for making show 1645 a reality and a winner.
Yes, and I also wanted to mention, we were laughing about the clip from the Tinfoil Hat podcast, if you remember that.
Yep.
And the people were mad. He's not a sidekick. He's Sam Tripoli. He's promoted your show. You're a douchebag. This is why I don't donate to the show, because you make fun of other podcasters. So I will be on the Union of the Unwanted podcast tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock Central Time, which is one of the shows that Sam is on. So
Give Sam grief for sending that note to you.
All right. Thank you all very much for supporting the show, 1645. I have a jobs karma and a special karma going out to Baron Chris Cohen of North Austin, who just got laid off from his job. So he needs some jobs karma as well.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
And thank you all for supporting the No Agenda Show. NoAgendaShowDonations.com. Thank you for 1645.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Shut up, slave.
Shut up, slave.
Eleanor Current wishes her husband Daniel a belated happy birthday. Oops, you screwed up, but you still got in. That was on March 16th. Sir Cameron Chris, happy birthday to his daughter Anya, turning 5 today. Happy birthday, Anya. Linda of the Shire wishes James Campbell a happy one. That'll be on the 27th. Scott LaPierre turns 33 on the 27th. Anonymous says happy birthday to Marcella. And Kevin wishes his wife Frida Manzo a happy birthday. She is turning 29. We say happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe.
Title changes, faceless ladies. Changes. Don't want to be a douchebag.
Yeah, no douchebags here. If you add another $1,000 to your total over your lifetime, you can change your title. It's all peerage. So Sir Jeremy Kuchumpati becomes a baronet today. And we say congratulations to Brett Samuels, who now becomes a baron. He is Baron Bloodbath. And thank you for supporting the No Agenda Show. We do have one dame we're going to bring up on stage here on the podium. So there is my blade, if you can.
Here you go.
Ooh, that's a good one. Hello, Marcella. It was bestowed upon you, and you are the lucky recipient of a damehood of the No Agenda Roundtable. It's good to have you here. We are very proud to pronounce thee as Dame of Metropolis. That's right for you. We've got Hookers and Blow, or how about Rent Boys and Chardonnay? But you didn't expect that to happen today, and along with a damehood, did you? Also, we have Harlots and Haldol, Redheads and Red Eyes, Beers and Blunts, Ruben S. Moon and Rosé, Geisha and Sake, Vodka, Vanilla, Bong Hits and Bourbon, Spark Cider and Escorts, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pablum. Now, I think you'll enjoy our mutton and meat. It's right here for you. Welcome to the dames of the No Agenda Roundtable. Go to noagendarings.com. Give us your ring size. We'll send out that handsome, pretty signet ring to you, along with some wax to seal your important correspondence. It's the whole thing. It's not just like a tote bag, okay? It's much better. It's something that you can keep using throughout your life. You can go to a meetup and have standing. It's really well worth it. Also a certificate of authenticity. And we thank you for supporting the No Agenda Show. In this case, it was given to you, but welcome. You are now a dame of the No Agenda Roundtable.
No Agenda Meetup.
Well, we may not have tours, but we do have meetups all over the world. And the feedback is always so good. People love hanging out with other people, but you need a reason. And it's always a little weird, you know. It's like ham radio guys, you know. Even though you all have one thing in common, it's like nerds. But when it comes to No Agenda meetups, It's really beautiful. People love the camaraderie. They love talking about the show, the topics, the vocabulary, of course, everyone will use in the morning and hit him in the mouth. And we're always in attendance, usually with heads on sticks. And I love it when people send us meetup reports. These are some of the funny ones. Denver had a meetup, and here's their report.
All right, no agenda meetup report for March 21st. Carly gets the Rosie the Riveter Award for her side projects.
This is Colin. Nothing on the side in the morning.
This is Phoenix. We're having a great time here. The talks are good and the conversation is better.
This is Elise, all the way from SoCo, driving 2 hours to be here tonight. Oh, three hours to be here tonight in the morning.
This is M. Andrew Jones, still putting chili, beans in the chili.
Mr. Jones brought the pecan pie to make it a true rosy meetup. Denver out.
There you go. On Rosie the Riveter Day. I love that. I love it. They had a themed meetup and it sounds like they had a good time. You can do this yourself. It's so easy. You just find a place where you all can meet, usually a bar. You know, that seems to be a fun place. People like to have a drink, a little bit of something to eat. And Leo Bravo has done this now for the 50th time in Los Angeles for the Flight of the No Agendas.
Hey, everybody. It's Leo Bravo at Meetup 50. I'm passing the phone around. Folks have things to say.
In the morning. There'll be trains here.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
ITM calling you from Pinko Lands.
In the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. Oh, yeah. Hit it.
Hey, we got trains over here. This is Slick Rick.
No bloodbath here.
In the morning. In the morning. And the 9th annual Northwest Houston meetup was held over the weekend. It was a success. We had two literal dudes named Ben. This is from Vice Counselor Economic Hitman. Dr. Ben Nelson, a microbiologist, Sir Ditchwalker, and his smoking hot wife, Marie, and Sir Gene, and his Sir Gene's beard, which is out of control. He needs a sidecar and his motorcycle to carry this thing around. Many more wanted to come, but they told us they had last-minute conflicts. That's no excuse. Fortunately, these are monthly meetups, so expect the next one in April. And here's the meetup number 5 for New York City, also known as the Tel Aviv.
In the morning, the next New York City No Agenda meetup, number 5. This is Dan Franco, the host. This is my wife.
Hi, it's Jen Franco.
Sir Tracy of the Netherlands.
Hey, what's going on? I'm Tom. Pleasure to be here. Excited to meet everybody. It's been a blast.
In the morning, 0706.
In the morning, No Agenda Nation. First meetup here in New York City of all places. Happy to be here. Shout out to Sinesta, my smoking hot wife who couldn't make it. She'll be at the next one, and happy to be at my first meetup.
Hey, Allie Pollock, my first meetup over here in New York from Muncie, and here are my smoking hot wife, Kaya, and a couple other cool people.
In the morning, John and Adam, we're all here at the Gem Saloon wondering why there's a security group upstairs.
A No Agenda New York City meetup number 5 was held at the Gem Saloon on Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. In total, 10 attended. Again, thank you to all who attended. We had a great time. Stay tuned for the next one.
Sounds like the guy from the subway announcements. That was great. New York City. That's nice. There's normal people in New York City. See, you can find them. All you have to do is pay attention to meetup, noagendameetups.com, where you can find, if you are looking, that on Tuesday there will be a No Agenda Eat Up in Wageningen at the Food Valley. This is Gitmo Nation Lowlands, the Netherlands. De Blauwe Kamer, Wageningen, Gelderland, Nederland. Sir Andre, Knight of the MP PayPal account, will be organizing that. On the next show day on Thursday, the North Georgia Monthly Meetup, 6 o'clock at Cherry Street Brewing in Alpharetta, Georgia. And, that's it. On the horizon, Camarillo, California, Osaka, Japan, Reno, Nevada. Did I say it right? Nevada?
Yep.
Raleigh, North Carolina, Colorado Springs, Myrtle Beach, Florida, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Anna, Texas, Dayton, Ohio, London, United Kingdom. Oh, come on, Londoners, show up for that one. Chamblee, Georgia, Keyport, New Jersey, Indianapolis, Indiana, Richmond, Virginia, Aurora, Illinois, Leiden, the Netherlands, where all the smart people are, and Richmond, Virginia. That's just a few where you can find connection, which always offers protection. You cannot spell community without unity. You'll find it at noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's very easy.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you are. triggered or held to blame. You wanna be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
It is. Love those meetups. It's so fun. So fun to hear those. That's right. What a community you guys have built. It's beautiful. And get each other's, phone numbers and texts, and get on a group text or WhatsApp or whatever you, Telegram, whatever you use, so that, you know, when something's going down, then you can be in touch with each other. If you go to Telegram, there must be 8 or 9 different No Agenda groups around the world. You can pop into that group no matter where you are. Say, hey, I'm looking for this. I'm in this. This is where I am. Boom. People will pop up. Oh, yeah, I can help you out. No problem. It's amazing. ISO time. Okay, I have 4. Maybe 1 is good. Oh, here's my first one.
Just for the uninformed and uninitiated.
No, it's no good.
This is next level.
That one. And.
Fantastic.
That's really all I've got.
Fantastic works.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Do you have no ISOs?
I have no ISOs. I dropped the ball.
Good news of the day. Good news on NA. What has Mimi given John to play today?
That's your good news intro, ladies and gentlemen. At the end of every single No Agenda show, we'd like to give you a good news story to make you feel good so that you go into the intermittent time between shows feeling wonderful. What do you have for us today, John?
Well, this is a story about Daisy the dog, and I don't know, maybe I'll get a picture of this situation where this dog, I don't want to say dumb dog, but this dog stuck her head in a truck tire wheel that had the center missing and got stuck in it, and they couldn't get her out.
And
here's what happened.
Dog in Franklin Township got herself into a bit of a pickle yesterday. A sweet little pup named Daisy found herself stuck inside of a tire rim at her owner's home. First responders were called in and quickly got to work. New Jersey correspondent Trish Hartman is live in Franklin Township.
Well, Maggie, you probably heard about firefighters rescuing a cat stuck in a tree, but probably not a dog stuck in a wheel. This poor dog got her head stuck in a tire rim yesterday while she was playing. The owner, the Delano family, did the only thing that they could think of and called the fire department. Daisy, the 11-month-old yellow lab, gets in some trouble from time to time. Yesterday, the pup was at home in Franklinville when she got her head wedged into the rim of a tire. Eventually, they called the fire department. The Franklinville Volunteer Fire Company responded.
We tried using some Dawn dish detergent. We tried some vegetable oil. We tried even slipping some plastic around her neck. At that time, Daisy was kind of gasping for air. Her eyes were red. We knew we kind of had to move fast.
Knowing time was short, Lieutenant Brandon Volpe thought his plasma cutter, a torch that's used to cut steel, might do the trick.
And I was like, this would be the perfect tool. I use it every day in my shop. I'm like, this would be perfect. Nice.
In a few minutes, Daisy was free. The Delanos say now that it's over, they're laughing. Glad that Daisy is okay.
Even afterwards, I was like, you guys ever done anything like this? And they're like, nope.
Poor dog. And Daisy was so nice. We got to meet her today. Now, Daisy is doing just fine besides a few scratches on her neck. Her owner says he'll be making sure that the yard is more dog-proofed so she doesn't get her head stuck anywhere else. Reporting live in Franklin Township, New Jersey, Trish Hartman, Channel 6, Action News. Maggie,
yeah,
Rick?
Yeah, well, she's probably a bit tired now.
Oh, sorry. Good news with a pun. Doesn't get any better than that. That's America, ladies and gentlemen, where we love talking about saving our pets with stuff that burns metal. Hey,
plasma cutter.
We need some international good news. Send it to john@dvorak.org.
Good news.
And that is the end of our media deconstruction for you. Over 3 hours. We always love doing it. We love bringing it to you. And we'll do it all over again on Thursday because that's what we do. No premiums, no subscriptions, no ads, no creepy pharma money. Would be good for us, but no, we'll not have any of that. Instead, we wind up with our good news, and we have dynamite end-of-show mixes. We've got Nate S., Stefan Jacobson, Professor J. Jones, and... no relation. Neil Jones, Flip Custodian, with the end of show mix. How about that? That don't suck. Coming up next on the stream, Random Thoughts, episode number 268. And you can also keep listening to the stream that you're listening to now or the modern podcast app. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in Fredericksburg, Texas, FEMA region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll return on Thursday. Please join us here. Until then, remember us at noagendadonations.com. Adios, mofos. A hooey hooey and such.
I've got a meme here that I put in my stack and I've lost. But man, does it say it all.
It's almost too delicious to believe, my friend.
But look at that juice. The juice that comes out. My hand is dripping wet here because I have nothing to juice.
Beautiful. Wow.
Anyone gonna eat this meatloaf?
Answer the question.
I think that sounds pretty good. Wow.
Now, some story that I can confidently say is an absolute joke.
Hate to say, I told you so, but they want to get rid of regular gay and lesbian stuff.
Some are even calling this spring and summer the cicada apocalypse.
They're talking about girls. Yeah. When they come out, they have to be quick.
Yay.
What are hot girl pills?
There's also silly girl pills. There's Prozac pillows. There's antidepressant. Go in case.
So you're no longer gay or lesbian. You are same gender loving. These are the new terms to erase gay people and have everyone be trans now. Because you are no longer gay. You are
also. It's about to get real wet apparently because urination velocity. That's more than elephants and horses. So.
And you've got like kids putting their mental health medication and diagnosis in their Twitter bios.
Because it validates men who identify as women who claim that they're lesbians. How far can they actually take this? Like,
I think the Windy City's about to get real fun this summer.
We're fat because of our severe sugar addiction. All unhappy looking, waiting for a Cinnabon. We're addicted. But now we have this fix. Ozempic, Wegovy, the drug companies that are just flooding America. Any drug you want, in the mail. Did you see the special? I peel back some layers on Oprah. One point of this special is to hammer into your brain. It's a disease. It's not you.
Dr. W. Scott Butch has been studying the disease of obesity.
Please note. It's a disease. They're making this stuff up. The lying and the they're shoving it down your throat with Oprah at the right at the helm. It's a spectrum. Where else have we heard this? Whereby everybody can be on the spectrum. These are the tricks they employ.
It's pathetic.
By the way, you're going to be on it for life.
And do you have to be on it for the rest of your life?
Yeah, the data would support that. When these patients stop the medication, the disease comes back.
You're now a drug pusher.
Both of you are consultants.
They are paid consultants for the pharmaceutical companies that they're talking about. It's called marketing. You're now a drug pusher.
That's our new philosophy, is to help people live longer, happier lives.
Mounjaro and Deathbound.
I'm concerned about Benjamin Netanyahu. The fact that he knew where Hamas was getting its money in 2018, he refused to cut it off. I'm concerned that he continued to prop Hamas up. I'm concerned that Benjamin Netanyahu had Hamas's terrorist plans a year before the terrorist attacks, and they did nothing. After the attacks, did nothing for 6, 7, 8, 10 hours. They were ill-prepared. I've never seen anything like it. Are we really going to tie Israel's future up to this man and say, if those of us who love Israel, those of us who were taught in Sunday school when we were 5 years old, that Jews are God's chosen people? Because 6 million were slaughtered in the Holocaust. Are we not allowed to question Benjamin Netanyahu's motives? Because if not, that's pretty sick. And it's not in Israel's best interest.
Dvorak.org/NA
Fantastic.